Tonight on The Download, from HBO's Silicon Valley, Martin Starr. Former Goose Island brewmaster and CEO and founder of Virtue Cider, Greg Hall. And another installment of Picnic, giving nicknames to every member of the 2016 Chicago Cubs. And now, here's your host, a man whose nickname is unsuitable for air, Justin Kaufman.
It ends with an S. I've always been in search of a nickname, like one that I feel, I guess, suits me. I've with a name like Justin, it's easy to go with a bustin' Justin, maybe a hustlin' Justin. But I've never had, like, I'd like a White Castle, Pedro Strop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something that's more like giddy up. When I was in, I hesitate to even talk about this, but when I was in high school, I got an unfortunate nickname from the jocks. Never good. They at the time they had their remake of the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Remember that with Steve Martin and maybe Michael Caine. I forgot who it was, John Lithgow or something like that. And for no reason whatsoever, I was sitting at lunch table and one of the the lunchroom bullies, couldn't even tell you his name anymore, was like, "Hey, Ruprecht." Because that was the name of the character that Steve Martin played.
Yeah.
And so they just thought that was the funniest thing ever. So that dogged me for like a year. Like for no reason. It'd be one thing if it was like, oh, he looks just like him. Or, oh, look, you know, he's got funny glasses. But it was just because he saw it. Like he saw it maybe that weekend. He's like, I got to call somebody. And I got it.
There's a classic scene where he... They're at the table, dinner table. You know, can I go to the bathroom?
Right, and he goes into his pants.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, right. So maybe that's what they were going for. They're like, this guy, maybe he smells like he just went to the bathroom in his pants, which I had good hygiene. I was a normal kid. So I think, I honestly, to this day, it had much more to do with just the
timing.
Unimaginable, or the lack of imagination from our defensive linemen.
Oh.
Yeah, or whoever. You know, he's the guy who would wear the jersey on a Friday, you know?
Yeah.
And even when football season was over, kept doing it for, like, solidarity. You're like, all right. And the glory days are over, bud. They're over. So I need a nickname, too.
Yeah.
But tonight for Picnic, Jason Hamill and Jason Hayward.
All right.
What do you think?
Let's do it.
That's good. A couple H's. Mid-season, you know, sort of grinded out guys that aren't going to the Midsummer Classic but need a nickname because they're the heart and soul of the club. Hayward's had a tough beginning to his tenure here in Chicago, but still, Jason Hamill, been around the block, been traded back. Jason Hamill and Jason Hayward, there are Cubs tonight in Picnic, which is coming up after 10 o'clock. It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We got a great show lined up for you. Greg Hall's going to be here. If you're not familiar with Greg Hall, he's one of the most innovative, well-known brewmasters in the entire country, if not the world. Greg Hall is the brewmaster for Goose Island, or was, before Goose Island sold to Anheuser-Busch back in 5 years ago, 2011. He's now the CEO and founder of Virtue Cider. Cider is exploding. You're not a big cider guy, Pete.
No. I want to be introduced. I want to know what the fascination is. I know, you know, people that are gluten free or whatever, you know, drink cider. But what's the fascination for a person that likes beer? Because I just think it's like, oh, people that want to get drunk and drink juice,
which is a lot of us.
So
if I could do that, I would do that.
I want to.
It's a huge. I mean, obviously, I remember being in Europe, in Scotland, in London, touring 20 years ago, and cider was the thing. So and he's bringing that here, and the American market for cider is just blown up.
Yeah,
something
they're opening.
Like Hall alleged. He reported in one something I was reading that it's up 700% in the last 5 years. That's crazy.
They're opening that cider bar strictly cider.
There you go.
Booming.
That's where we'll find you every
night
after the show.
I can be convinced. I need to know. I'm ignorant to the scene. It just sounds like people that want to get drunk and drink juice.
Which, again, sounds delightful. That sounds like the way to go, as opposed to drinking beer. Like, oh, this tastes terrible, but I'm getting drunk, so that's good. So I feel like that's every second sip of beer. I'm like, oh, what is this? This is so synthetic. I'm like, but it'll get the job done. At least if you get drunk off of juice, why not, right?
I loved apple juice when I was a kid.
There you go. Greg Hall will be here. He'll be my guest at the big table. That's a big get. Also tonight, Martin Starr will be with us. Martin Starr, the actor from Silicon Valley, also from Party Down, one of my favorite shows of all time, from Starz. Also Freaks and Geeks. You will recognize Martin Starr. He's in a lot of stuff. He's really a guy who, a young kid who really got his career made by Judd Apatow and working with Seth Rogen and that whole crew. He's had that opportunity, and he just announced that he's going to be in Spider-Man, which is coming up, the new Spider-Man reboot next summer. They're going to start shooting in the fall, I believe. So there you go. Martin Starr is going to be on the download tonight. Love that guy. He's so good.
Yeah.
He's so good on as Guilfoyle on Silicon Valley. He's really, really good. There's
show
just
show is so good,
and he's really found himself a career of being a part of really, really edgy, strong ensembles. I mean, Freaks and Geeks, that's what that whole show was based on, the ensembles. You know, he's sort of geek chic. He's brought that to the mainframe. So we'll talk with Martin Starr coming up. Also tonight, Dwayne Wade, is he coming to Chicago? Come on,
I'm starting to get excited. Am I a dummy?
I just wonder if it's to sell newspapers. The idea that Dwayne Wade is interested in leaving Miami to either go to Milwaukee, is it Cleveland, or Chicago. Why would he come to Chicago? Don't get me started. Sam Panionovich will join us. He is from here. He's got roots here. He's here a lot. He feels like it's close to home.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that Dwayne Wade comes to the Chicago Bulls? And if he does, let's say that they are able to secure Dwayne Wade. What do you think of that move? What do you think of bringing Rajon Rondo, Dwayne Wade to Chicago to play with Jimmy Butler and the young players that they've assembled over the last couple of years? Now, does it change your mind in the direction? Were we too much in the rebuilding mode in the last couple of weeks to not see that this team could reboot without rebuilding?
Retooling, as Gar said. I mean, they're both old. You know, Rondo and Dwayne are both old.
They're over 30, yeah.
So, I mean, you think, like, well, you know, that they're not going to be around for forever.
I mean,
but, you know, they'll be competitive for a few years. It gets me more excited than I was
yesterday.
Say,
and frankly, if they can score Dwayne Wade, and it's a big if. I mean, come on. I mean, I love that we're talking about it, but I guess that's what we do on talk radio. Will we get Dwayne Wade?
No, because I'm a dummy. I get sucked because I was like, no, that's never going to happen. He's going to look.
And we've unfortunately been down this road before. I mean, Dwayne Wade came to Chicago before that whole LeBron James bogus stuff in Miami. This could be the same thing again. It's just a ploy for more money. And so do we play this game? We probably play this game. And it's I mean, if it's possible, if they do secure Dwayne Wade. You know, it's a big star and a big market. Rajon Rondo looks much better now with Dwayne Wade, and Jimmy Butler slides more into he can play both positions as the small forward, the shooting guard. I mean, that's a formidable three.
Who do they unload?
Well, they have to unload a lot, and I think that is
it's the problem. Getting the math worked out.
They already said they're looking to unload salaries. I don't know who would be unloadable. You know, who do you get? I mean, who do you sign and trade with somebody and just give them everybody so you have three players on the roster? Yeah, maybe that's not. Well, we'll talk. Sam Panionovich knows this stuff. We'll talk with Sam coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. And then tonight, like we said, picnic, 10 o'clock, Jason Hayward and Jason Hamill. But before we do any of that, this hour, Mike Fouché's in for his regular segment, Alder Track.
Mm-hmm.
property tax bills and police board. Here we go again. Two big issues here in Chicago. Property taxes through the roof. Everyone's getting their bill now. And secondly, the police board, a committee meeting at city council today kind of went off the rails once again because the community wants more input. So where are we with police boards and the promised shakeup from Mayor Emanuel? We'll find out coming up here after the news at 7:30. News, weather, and traffic brought to you by Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Rob's in the newsroom watching the news as we speak. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman, Beats by Zim. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, why don't we take a break? We'll continue here on The Download with The Carryout. Stay with us. So Download here on 720 WGN. We've got a great show, so let's get it popping, as the kids say. Does any kid say it? No kid says that. Only anyone over 30 says that. You ever heard a kid be like, let's get it popping, Dad? No. Have you heard a dad go, let's get it popping? Several times. All right, here's The Carryout. This is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Did you get your tax bill? The city put out the second installment of your property tax bill this week, and many are surprised to see double and in some cases triple the amount from last time. This is a big deal, and we've been waiting for it. It was passed by Mayor Emanuel and the City Council when they worked the budget deficit. The city isn't done, though. There could be another tax increase next year and another for CPS. Authorities are thinking of cutting back by not sending the bills through the mail and instead having technicians just come over to your house with oiled-up rubber gloves. Same difference. The city of Chicago and the pharmaceutical company Pfizer have struck a deal to have Pfizer tell people that opioids are addictive. That's it. They're going to just put out a label. You know that they put that on bottles of alcohol and packs of cigarettes in casinos, right? Not sure that's why people are getting addicted, because they didn't know. No, it's because it makes them feel good and doctors prescribe it. I got an idea. Why don't we put the label on the doctor? I think we're onto something. Some shuffling at the City Department of Cultural Affairs. Michelle Boone is out and Columbia College's Mark Kelly is in. Boone is moving over to Navy Pier to run programs. The former cultural affairs czar moving to Navy Pier is like the head of the Art Institute moving to that store where you can make your own pottery. I mean, it's a nice store. It's good pottery, I guess. Boone did a nice job of bringing Chicago a cultural plan and downsizing the taste of Chicago, although I don't think she went far enough. Tennessee Senator Bob Corker took himself out of the Trump VP running today. He was concerned that he didn't see eye to eye with the candidate and that he couldn't pull off the long tie. Trump likes the long tie. I still hope it's Chris Christie. And then I hope that Hillary Clinton picks Bloomberg or Schumer or someone from New York so we can feel the full effect of a country run by New Yorkers. Lots of yelling, hey, good, bad, day, eating crappy pizza while they're doing it. Can't wait. That's what this country needs, New Yorkers. The Attorney General Loretta Lynch accepted the suggestion of the FBI and will not file charges against Secretary Hillary Clinton for her mismanagement of classified emails. When reached for comment, Hillary was like, you know what, I don't give statements over the phone, but if you give me your email, I'll send you some really cool stuff that will blow your mind. Don't tell anybody. Former President George W. Bush turned 70 today. Remember him? I wonder if he's still painting or worrying about traveling abroad because of war crimes. Wonder what he's doing with retirement. McDonald's has had so much success with the all-day breakfast menu that they're expanding their offerings this fall. So that means get ready for the egg, bacon, sausage, coffee, Slurpee. You know, whatever it is, it's going to be gross. A new scientific discovery. Saturn's moon Titan may have characteristics that support life. When hearing this news, humans were like, yes, let's get up there and ruin it. Now, come on. Trump, Trump, Trump. A new study says that when given a choice, we're choosing the wrong sunscreen. I guess some of the more popular brands aren't the best at protecting us from the sun. Well, that's why I only use home remedies. I'll give you a hint. It's butter. In weather, Thundercats move out. A nice day after a night of rolling thunder. Poor little doggies. What a terrible week. In sports, the Cubs lost to the Reds today, and they have now dropped 6 of their last 7. Hey, the trading deadline's coming, so let's see what prospects we can get. You know, reset and compete in 2022.
Nah, the Cubs get the Atlanta Braves next, and then a 3-game set with the Pirates in Pittsburgh, then the All-Star game. And I'd say that'd be a nice rest for the team, but pretty much everyone from the team is playing in it, so no rest for the weary. Arrieta is slated to pitch on Friday, so we could see him being available to start the Midsummer Classic. The White Sox are going for their 5th straight series win when they take on the Yankees in the rubber game of the series. I haven't seen the Yankees yet this year, but man, A-Rod and Beltran, they are bloated, chubby dudes. I guess that's what happens. You're not taking steroids anymore. Alex Avila hits the DL with a hammy. Also, quietly, DH Justin Morneau started a rehab assignment and could join the Sox after the All-Star break. The Chicago Bulls executives missed their meeting with Dwayne Wade due to airport delays. There is word they're going to try to do it tomorrow instead, although do we have to? I mean, is Benny the Bull coming with? Seriously, we're going to do this again? You're going to show him a PowerPoint? Maybe mock up a hologram with him in a Bulls jersey? Cut it out. Everybody, cut it out. Stop playing with our emotions. He's not going anywhere. We've read this crappy book before, and Dwayne Wade, shame on you. If you're not serious, shame on you. You're from Robbins. Act like it. Sorry. All right, when are we going to get some Bears news? That's what we need. We got about 2 more weeks before football starts full on, and we're going to be talking about it till February. But I want to talk about it now. Come on, nothing? And finally, the Taste of Chicago is underway, and boy, oh boy, that's good news for those who like to eat hot food while sitting on a concrete curb. Mmm, just the way God intended it. Well, that's the carryout for July 6, 2016. Forget the taste. I'll give you 2 breaded raviolis for half the price. You know those raviolis are old. Coming up, Mike Fouché is going to be here for our regular segment, assessing the property tax bill that you just got. You live in Cook County. And also, the police board shenanigans today at City Council. That's coming up after the 7:30 news. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Mike Fouché will be with us right after the news to talk about City Council committee meetings today and also your property tax bill and why this may not be the end of it. Yikes.
Yeah, that was awesome. Opening that bad boy up.
It really was. You know, today I went down looking for it after yesterday's convo and I couldn't find it. And I asked my wife, I was like, did you see the envelope come in? She's like, no. I'm like, oh, maybe I didn't get one. Maybe they skipped me. And then, like, I saw in the garbage, like, some junk mail. And the bill was in there. And I'm like, well, you don't throw that away.
Well, but the outside of the envelope does look kind of like an advertisement.
She wasn't thinking. She just got duped by the advertisement of it. So I pulled it out and looked at that fun reading experience. I was like, wow. It's amazing. I mean, and what Mike's going to tell us, and he's been telling us for the last year on this program, is it's just the beginning because they're going to do it again next year, and they're going to have to do now CPS taxes as well.
Did they put a line item in there about how much is going to service pensions?
I didn't see it either.
I think they need to start doing that because I actually looked over the tax bill for the first time in a while.
Yeah, I know, right?
And
it's the first time I actually looked at it. Like I knew what it took me 10 minutes of looking at it blankly. And I'm like, why am I tricking myself? Like I knew what any of this is. The best part is at the top, which I think is the funniest part, is they give you 3 big numbers of what the number is going to be when you're late paying it. Right. So it's like if you're a month late, here it is. If it's 3, I'm like, why wait? I mean, is everyone late on this thing that you're spending this much space on the bill?
Yeah, that's always in bold.
It's in bold.
Capital letters.
I'm like, I don't understand why there's so much space on this letter given to the late payment. And I was like, tell me where this stuff is going, but that wasn't in there. So anyway.
I'm waiting for the tax bill to be like your energy bill or gas bill. Would you like to help out disadvantaged Cook County residents? Circle here to donate $10.
Yeah, right. That's what we're doing with our taxes, by helping out other people. I will say that they should do it like the bill I get from ComEd that I can't tell if it's a scam or not when it tells me that I'm using more energy than my neighbor.
Have you ever got one of those? Oh, energy shaming bills?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I got one of those the other day, as a matter of fact. My line actually wrapped around the page.
I thought it was just me. Somehow
I was supposed to feel guilty for paying my bill on time and in full all the time.
Every time, right.
Dude, if I want my house like an icebox, I'm making my house like an icebox.
Well, good, because for an hour I was like trying to figure out how to, if there was something wrong with my fridge. Now I realize I'm just being shamed. I was trying to work on the ceiling of it.
Energy shaming.
I was working on the ceiling. Oh, how can I make this more efficient?
Don't you have ceiling fans?
Comment told me that I need to make it more efficient.
Open the window.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, a big day today at City Council and the committees.
Yeah.
Also, big day for Cook County residents who got their tax bills.
Taxes.
Mike Fouché is here for our weekly segment. Mike is the man behind AllTheTrack subscription site that covers all things Chicago and Springfield. Good to see you, Mike.
Good to be here.
All right, so let's talk about this because we've been talking about it on this program for over a year. The mayor, this was back in the, I guess it was back in the spring?
October.
October. Jeez, we're already back for October. A year ago. They passed a tax increase, which was going to be a property tax increase. Record tax increase to plug the budget hole. We're all waiting for it.
Yep.
This is when it kicks in. What did Cook County residents see this week?
Booyah. They got a big happy surprise in their property tax bill, and you know, if you look at it, the Cook County board, the taxes for Cook County went up, taxes for the city went up in a big way.
Yeah, that's
and,
the big one.
You know, that was the really big one. So, you know, I don't mind saying I had a 4-digit increase in my property taxes this year. Yay. And, you know, what we should also be thinking is that the way that the city property tax was structured is that it's going to step up over 4 years. So we got 3 more years of increases. And, oh, yeah, remember that budget deal that was cut last week for CPS? One of the things is that the state legislature gave CPS the ability to raise their taxes even
more. All right, let me back you up here. So when you say they raise, so what we just saw, the sticker shock that we just saw when you got back from 4th of July, or if you were here at 4th of July on Saturday.
Right.
That next year we'll see an increase. The year after will be another increase
for the city. Yes, yeah,
and then another to so and at
so
that point,
three more years of increases baked in already.
Does that stay at that level at that point, or is this sort
well,
of
well, you know, I don't know. Somebody, you know, might
but we're
go
not
up,
going
might
back.
Go down.
We're not going back to what
no,
we had.
It's baked in for 3 years of increases already, and so then there's other stuff that can come too. So you know, we know the CPS is going to have to raise their taxes. They need to come up with another $250 million at least, probably more. From property taxes, you know, so we should see another jump next year. Now, there's this other thing that's going on too, which is, you know, if well, before I get to that, if you can protest your tax increase, you can protest the assessment, the value of your home. And actually, somebody was telling me that in the last year, they've had a record number of assessment requests to the Cook County tax assessor, reassessment requests. And so, you know, maybe you can get a little bit of a decrease.
Which is a fascinating
whole
process.
Side process.
We should do a whole segment on how you do that. And essentially what they do, I read a story one time where it's as simple as, I think there are 3 people who are on that board who are like, okay.
Yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
don't really do any science to it. They're like,
You can now, if you're a homeowner, you can now apply online. So you just fill out a little form online, and
you see that happen a lot when it comes down to associations and condos and people who are on boards. They will automatically assess or reassess or go back. Does that work? I mean, are people seeing relief from that?
Yeah, it works.
But I don't understand how that works if the city needs the money. Right? How does that work, Mike? I don't get it.
Why are you asking this? This is about government. I mean, you know, how it works. It's the Keystone Cops. The Cook County Assessor's doing one thing and the city is doing something completely different. You know, you can't put those things together. So, you know, meanwhile, while there's all this going on, there's the assessment of your value and then there's the tax on your value, right? So the tax is levied by one body and then the assessment is done by another group of people. So you can seesaw in what you're actually paying. So we did a story a few weeks ago at AllTheTrack on Cook County suburbs. Some of the southern Cook County suburbs are going to get assessed next year.
And many of the school districts, because of the plummeting property values in places like Dalton and Harvey,
and Robbins with Dwayne Wade,
right, they've been going down, and governments haven't been able to get as much money because the assessment, the value of the property is going down. So, you know, you might 5% of 100,000 is less than 5% of 200,000. School districts in these areas, they have their property taxes capped. They're not allowed to increase beyond a certain percentage. So the result is that as the property values are going down in those places, they're able to get less and less money. There are all these school districts in the south suburbs that are expecting that when the assessments are done next year, they're not going to have enough money to open their doors. So all this talk that we have about CPS needing a bailout this year, CPS needs a bailout, it's going to be way worse for these guys because they can't just increase their property tax. They could, but the values on the properties are already so low. You know, in a lot of these places, they have like a $55,000 home.
Let me ask this politically, and you've been around the game long enough to know that we saw with Governor Pat Quinn, he raised the income tax, and quickly everybody was out to get Pat Quinn, and he lost the election to Bruce Rauner. Does Mayor Emanuel, does he have any, when these bills actually hit the mailbox of all the Cook County residents, is he politically in hot water? Is he in trouble where people are going to come out and say, I'm not voting for this guy ever again? Rahm Emanuel did this.
And it's going to happen for the next 3 years. I mean, until 2019, you know, 2018, I think, is the last year when there's an increase. But, you know, that's going to be pretty fresh in people's minds. And they're still going to need to come up with more money to pay other stuff. I mean, the budget that they assumed for the next few years would be level over previous years. That's never happened. You always need more money for something.
Is he going to sell the political story that this was, is he finally going to say this wasn't me? This was Mayor Daley. This was someone before me. This has nothing to do. I'm just fixing it.
He's never said that.
He's never said that, but he should.
And I'm not sure that that necessarily helps him, you know, to blame kind grandfatherly Richard M. Daley now. But he has been very steadily saying, we're fixing one problem after another, and we're fixing it. And, you know, he's been pretty confident with that message. He's been pretty relaxed in the last few press conferences. Actually, in the last press conference, I wasn't there, but one of our reporters was. Afterwards, he sat around and hung out with the reporters for like 20 minutes and just shot the breeze.
Wow.
That's
new.
Oh, my gosh. That's like FDR kind of stuff. You know, it's you expect him to just
like Blagojevich type stuff.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Well, let's not make that comparison. But, you know, I mean, so I think he feels pretty good about where he is and where he's going. And, you know, he's still got a lot of bumps.
Mike Fouché is a guest tonight, our regular segment here on The Download. Mike Fouché, the man behind AlderTrack, the subscription news site, which is getting a name change. We'll talk about that coming up here after the break. We'll also talk about the City Council Committee today on police and how that went a little haywire. We'll talk about that coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. Mike Fouché in studio, the man behind AlderTrack. But before we go any further, what's this name change business?
We're not going to be AlderTrack anymore.
We're
We're going to be The Daily Line.
The Daily Line. Why the switch?
DailyLine.net. Because, number one, we've always had aspirations more than Chicago. And to be talking about Alderman, AlderTrack, Chicago. That's how we got started. We were following Alderman, but we're way more interested in just Chicago. We're way more interested in just Chicago government, so we're changing our name to The Daily Line. And the other thing is that we're launching this really super awesome website on Monday that's going to have the ability to be able to log in and search past articles, which you can't do right now.
Right.
You'll be able to find out all the doings of Scott Wagasback and your other favorite political people.
Sure.
And then we're also going to have a monthly subscription. So you're going to be able to subscribe monthly rather than annually. And so rather than ponying up $400 at a time, we're going to have a $25 a month fee that we're going to be launching out.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks,
I know it's
man.
Tough name changing a new site and things like that.
Yeah,
so
right?
I'm sure that
what is available on the web? What domain can I get? Mike's Party House was taken too. That was too bad.
.gov?
.mil.
.mil.
.mil, yeah.
I've seen the ladies from Chewing, the old Chewing the Fat podcast, now Chewing, Louisa Chew and Monica.
Yeah.
They did Chewing.tv.
That's pretty sweet.
Oh, no, no, no. That's not, no, no. Chewing.xyz.
.xyz.
I like that.
There's also Club. Hmm. You could do .club. There's .club. .pro.
That's where I would start up www.inda.club.
Inda.club. I bet right? you that one's taken. Yeah. Some smart guy's already gotten that
and
one.
And if not, they're doing it right now.
Right. You could do pro.
Yeah, pro club.
JustinKaufman.pro.
.pro. I'm still with club. I like club.
JustinKaufman.club. Well, I'm going to go buy that when
Justin
I get home.
JustinKaufman.inda.
I'm going to buy that at home.
.club.
We'll do that. JustinInda.club.
All right, back to the news here. Today, city council committee hearings were taking place, one on police. What was the... we'll talk about what happened at the committee meeting, but what was the meeting for?
So back in June, Lori Lightfoot, who's the president of the police board and also the chair of the Police Accountability Task Force, they did this huge study on all the problems, and they did an amazing job with this report, mm-hmm. is that she held a press conference in June that said, hey, look, you can't just come up with a bunch of reforms from people in the mayor's office. You have to be engaging the community. There are many, many experts in Chicago and around the country that know how to get this stuff done right. We demand, we expect to see some transparency and to be engaging the community. And lo and behold, about a couple hours later, the two city council chairmen, the chair of budget committee, Carrie Austin, the chair of the police affairs committee, Ariel Raboira, said, oh, we're going to hold a hearing on that. I'm so glad you mentioned that. It's going to be on July 6th and 7th. Cool. Mark your calendar. So, you know, that we were like, oh, cool. You know, it's like 3 weeks from now. They'll have plenty of time to do something good. That'll be really great. Well, not so much. And this is what was really crazy. We sat down on Tuesday and we're like, okay, what's going to happen on Wednesday? We should look into this. And we started calling all these people who are experts in police affairs kind of stuff. And, you know, we called the ACLU. Oh, yeah, we got a call on July 4th. What? They got a call. They were invited to a hearing on Wednesday the 6th on Monday, July 4th.
So they, because of the holiday weekend and everything else in between, they just never got around to putting anything into this
well,
hearing.
Well, they could have called a week in advance, you know, and many other experts weren't invited. It was a small group of people. We called the police department. Were you invited to be there to testify? No, we were not invited to be there to testify. So there was this kind of crazy thing about, well, what are we doing? And none of the aldermen publicized the hearing. You know, typically something goes out in an email or they tweet
right,
or they do something.
Yeah, right, right.
None of that was done.
Why,
so it was
why
sort of
Mike?
In the darkness.
Why, I don't understand why keep when the goal, the stated goal is to have a public hearing, why try to keep the public in the dark?
I don't know. I think they forgot.
I think so, too. I mean, I think it's just, or they're coming up and they're like, oh, we got this thing on Wednesday. Totally forgot
right.
about
Let,
it.
Let's
hurry
get
up
there.
And,
yeah,
right.
And it's on Thursday. We got another one. What a bummer. So, I'm joking. And I think that what's more realistic is that members of council were hoping that they would be able to have this hearing right after the holiday weekend. A lot of people are on vacation. You know, you forget about it. Oh, yeah, we had the hearings. But it turns out there's a bunch of people that actually really care about this. You know, people getting shot.
Go figure.
And so there's a lot of people that really care about something like this. And so then what happened today is that there were a number of protests and press conferences before saying, you know, we shut down these hearings. They're no good. They're not transparent. There's nothing that's going to come out of this. And then when they did have the hearings, person after person today testified saying, this is not a legitimate process. Anything that comes out of this is not going to be useful. You need to actually go into the community. You need to actually leave City Hall and go talk to people. You need to get real experts. We're not going to legitimize this process. And so they're going to have another one tomorrow. And we asked for a list of who's going to be testifying. And it's not a very strong list for tomorrow either. So, I mean, there were
community activists and people who did come out and they said, this is a sham. And so far, we need more public input.
That's
there
right.
doesn't seem to be, and that's what the
right.
papers kind of grabbed out.
Right.
There doesn't seem to be
right.
a mechanism in which the public are being engaged in this process.
Which is really kind of amazing because it's not hard in order to find these people anymore because they're constantly making themselves known in the public eye. It's not difficult in order to find the people who know something about police policy. There are many organizations around the country that are experts, that are well known. You know, do a Google search. You can find these places. It's not hard. And it seems that members of city council are just not capable of doing that.
You were around City Hall today or this week, you know, after the 4th of July holiday. One thing that came out is, you know, that the police came out on Sunday and had a press conference saying that they had managed the violence. I think that they had smaller numbers than the year before.
They did.
And then right after the press conference, there was a rash of shootings overnight between Sunday and Monday. What is the feeling from lawmakers, politicians, authorities when it comes to the success or failure of this 4th of July weekend? Do they see it as a success? Do they see it as a failure?
Well, first off, the big thing that happened this last weekend is that through shuffling of schedules and getting certain people onto the street and out of the office and onto the street, there were effectively about 1,200, 1,400 more police officers on the street, which is a pretty big number. And by the way, that's the number that around 1,200 is the number that we keep talking about is the lesser number of police that we have in Chicago than we had about 6 or 7 years ago.
Interesting. Okay.
And so, you know, maybe there isn't much of a coincidence. So that's something that I think is important to keep in mind. But another thing that folks that I've talked to that are in policing and stuff like that in criminal justice reform is they kind of talk about it like a stress ball. You know, if you're just going to go and hit it with a whole bunch of police officers in an area, you know, when you squeeze the stress ball, it gets bigger in another place. And that's essentially what people expect to happen because there was a limited number of shootings and there were a lot of arrests of strategic people this weekend. We can anticipate that there will be some other shootings later. I think that there is a much larger endemic issue that's not being dealt with.
Is there any way, Mike, when we talk about more police officers on the street, and you talk about that number, 1,200, is there any way, or are we hearing it at all from the police department or from the city, that they are attempting to boost the numbers of police officers here in the city of Chicago? Or is that just
actual,
is that a budget
actual
killer?
True numbers of officers? You know, there's small numbers. I think they've added like 100 more or something like that. You know, badged officers, sworn officers. And I think one of the other things that Superintendent Eddie Johnson is trying to do right now is to increase the number of civilians that are working in CPD and moving out sworn officers out of positions that they don't have to be in. That's something that they're constantly doing so that there are more sworn officers that are actually working on the street.
You and I, we should set something up in the next couple of weeks, maybe get somebody in from FOP or police or anywhere to talk about that. This I think that there's more to be talked about, the idea of the roles being shorter and smaller than they were 6 or 7 years ago and how that actually equates to violence.
But
on
really,
the street.
Ultimately, we're looking at, you know, not a true increase in the number of police officers. We're still huge amounts of overtime, and the reason why there's so much overtime is that some people argue there's not enough officers that are working.
Mike Fouché from the DailyLine.net. There you go. That's the new name. I like it.
Yeah,
the Daily Line. Mike Fouché. You can find it all about Chicago and Illinois politics. Mike, good to see you. Thanks for being here. See you next week.
Thanks a lot.
This is Chicago's very own WGN Radio, Chicago, and WGNRadio.com. Coming up, Greg Hall's here. He is the former brewmaster for Goose Island and the CEO and founder of Virtue Cider. We're going to talk about cider, craft beer, and Chicago as a beer town. You know, I'd love to know how much the Halls, both he and his father, sort of talk about the history of this great town when it comes to beer. So we'll talk with Greg Hall about that. He's my guest at the big table. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Martin Starr is going to be here. He is the star of Silicon Valley on HBO. He's also was part of the ensemble on Party Down, one of my favorite shows on Stars, and Freaks and Geeks, which is one of the original Judd Apatow projects. Martin Starr, great character actor, just announced that he's going to be in the new Spider-Man reboot, which is coming out next year. He'll join us coming up here in the download after 9 o'clock. Also, Sam Panionovich will join us to talk about Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade possibly coming to the Chicago Bulls, or are we just doing this? Is this just becoming a really sadistic dance for Bulls fans, where every time a free agent says, "Yeah, I'd love to talk to teams," they're just using us for leverage? I think that's what's happening here, but we'll find out from Sam what he thinks. And then 10 o'clock, Picnic. It's where we're picking nicknames for the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Tonight, Jason Hammel and Jason Hayward. We need nicknames for those guys. It's coming up. My guest tonight at the big table knows a thing or two about Chicago beer. Greg Hall is the former brewmaster at Goose Island. Shocked the craft beer world 5 years ago with the Goose Island sale to Anheuser-Busch. Since then, Hall moved on to be one of the leaders in this country's cider revolution. As the CEO and founder of Virtue Cider, it's a Chicago company set up on a Michigan farm. The company has had growing pains, but mostly because cider has just exploded in this country. Virtue had a hard time keeping up with the demand. This past year, he sold the majority stake in that company to Anheuser-Busch as well. He's still the CEO of the company. Hall comes from beer. His father, John Hall, started Goose Island, and Greg is arguably one of the most innovative names working in beer and cider today. He's a Chicagoan, starting great Chicago companies, and he's my guest tonight at the big table. Greg, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Justin.
Nice to meet you. All right, so let's talk about Virtue Cider. I mean, this company's cider, we were just talking at the beginning of the show, just blown up. I read somewhere 700% in the last 5 years. The demand is off the charts for this drink.
It is. It's exciting to see. When I first told people I was leaving Goose Island and going to start a cider company, the typical response was, "That's great. My kids love cider. I put a box in their lunchbox right. A couple times a week." And I'm like, "No, that's juice. We're going to make traditional European-style hard cider. So we're going to get local apples from Michigan, from the Cider Coast in Michigan, press them, age them in barrels, and make wonderful traditional cider."
What did you know about cider at the time? Because reading your story, you pushed Goose Island a little bit, your dad, to say, let's do some cider. It never really happened at Goose Island.
Yeah, it didn't happen. It was one of those things that, one of the many things that was on the list that we didn't get to, that we probably would have gotten to if we would have been around another 5 years or so. But I was pretty anxious to get that going. I saw a good business opportunity, and it really struck a strong chord for me, being able to go directly to the farmers in Southwest Michigan, buy apples directly from them. And the people are honestly are our neighbors out there, and that's pretty cool.
You know, I mean, we were talking at the beginning of the show just about when you say European cider. It's a popular drink. You find it a lot in London and in Scotland, those places. Why do you think it's catching on here in the States? What is it about the drink that is pushing a 700% increase in sales in the last 5 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the bigger question is, why did it take so long?
Yeah.
Because, Americans, there's just a thing I saw the other day on the interwebs talking about apples are about the healthiest thing, according to nutritionists. Everybody loves apples. Everybody goes apple picking in the fall. We have a history in the U.S. of making cider. The founding fathers made cider. The pioneers made cider. We all, it was a big cider-making country until Prohibition and then it stopped, and beer came back, and wine came back, and spirits came back. But for whatever reason, cider didn't. And it stayed a big part of the drinker's palate in Europe, especially in England, but in France and Spain and Germany. A lot of people still drink cider. And then in South America, Australia, South Africa. So it's just kind of odd that it didn't take off here earlier. I think it was just waiting for somebody to go off and do it.
It's interesting too, because there are cider companies, and you'll see the commercials, for cider. There's the and you'll see the displays in the grocery stores for it. But what you're talking about is almost like a craft movement for cider. This is is the idea of creating something that's independent, something that's a little bit more. Craft is the word than the major mainstream products that have been produced to this date.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the craft cider has always been around, but it's been made, in obscure parts of the country on farms that are, off in the middle of nowhere, where you have to drive up on Saturday and honk three times and hopefully someone will come out and sell you a few bottles of cider. that's the way it kind of used to be. Those guys are still around. God bless them. They make some of the best cider I've ever had. But now cider's gone mainstream. And I think the big brewers looked at it and they say, hey, we set out this whole craft beer thing for like the first 25 years, and we don't want to get caught with their pants down again. So they got into cider fairly early. And, you know, they've got a lot of money to spend. You know, I think if you drive around the Chicago area, you probably see as much cider on billboards as you do craft beer, even though it's much smaller. So, you know, that ends up being good for me and the other small cider.
Well, I mean, is that how it's going to work? Are you going to see small cider production companies getting the opportunity with purchases from mainstream beer companies? Is that how it's going to work? Or are mainstream beer companies going to say, we're going to start our own cider, we don't need to purchase a Virtue?
Well, I think you'll see both. And I think you'll also see as the craft breweries have started pairing up in the last few years, you'll see them either come up with their own cider, as companies like Harpoon and Boulevard is talking about doing one, and there's a few others. Shorts Brewing in Northern Michigan has got a cider now. And then you'll see others that will probably buy some of the existing smaller cider companies out there. Because when you can integrate two companies and not have to have as much back-of-house staff, and you can have the sales staff sell a wider range of products, everybody ends up winning.
Well, this is your second round with Anheuser-Busch. Obviously, we'll talk about the 5 years since the sale of Goose Island. But, I mean, what is good for having Anheuser-Busch take the majority stake of Virtue Cider? What is the good part of a major beer company taking over?
Well, you know, the first thing people think of when they hear a craft brewery or in our case, cidery, sells out, they think, oh, the owners got rich. It's not just the owners. It's really all the stakeholders, you know, get a piece of it. So when Goose Island sold to AB, for instance, everybody that's still working there, Goose Island's been allowed to grow much more rapidly than they would have previously. So what's happened is everybody that works there is making more money, has better benefits. There's more people working there. They're employing more people. That's kind of a good thing.
Yeah, right.
The accounts, the bars and restaurants and stores that wanted to get Goose Island beer but couldn't, well, now they can. You know, that's kind
is
of
that
a good
the same,
thing.
That's the same concept for Virtue Cider? You believe that's the same trajectory, the opportunity for this to get into the distribution of Anheuser-Busch?
And it's the same thing for Lagunitas pairing up with Heineken and you know, all these other small breweries, Ballast Point, you know, all these other deals. I think that there is, you know, it's a business that we're in. You know, it's not a hobby. People think that they get so emotionally attached to their local brewery. You know, they feel like it's part of the local culture, and it is. But it's still a business, and we've got to pay bills, and we've got to employ people, and we want to, you know, be able to grow.
Well, a lot of people don't recognize, too, and you know this, but, I mean, what Anheuser-Busch or Miller Coors or any of the companies that are, you know, that we're talking about that are buying up craft beer, they have distribution channels that are far bigger and more got their hooks in the whole country than you could ever get with a Goose Island or a Virtue Cider.
Well, you know, when you have a craft brewer on, what they love talking about is their beer. That's what we all sit around the table at the end of the day. We drink the beer. We talk about the beer. We talk about other people's beer. And then we complain about distribution. We complain about all that stuff. That is not what makes us get in this business, being able to sign up wholesalers
right
in different states and do ride-alongs and all that and meet with chains and all that. That's part of the business. And if you can get a hand in that part of the business and focus more of your time, more of your intellectual energy on making great beer or making great cider, I think that's a huge win.
Greg Hall is my guest tonight. He's the CEO and founder of Virtue Cider. He's also the former brewmaster over at Goose Island. We'll continue our conversation about craft beer and cider here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, my guest in studio with me at the big table, Greg Hall. He's former brewmaster at Goose Island and the CEO and founder of Virtue Cider. 5 years ago since the sale of Goose Island to Anheuser-Busch, and Virtue Cider just this last year sold majority stake to Anheuser-Busch as well. Let's talk about you as brewmaster. Talk about getting into beer. This would be the late 80s when you started. What drew you to the job? Obviously, your dad was the guy who started Goose Island, but talk about that.
Sure. Well, my father started Goose Island in 1988, which is, I was 22 at the time. That's pretty much any 22-year-old young man's dream when he's going to school at a Big Ten university is saying, my dad's opening a brewery, because it was pretty rare back then.
Right.
There weren't a lot of breweries. Goose Island was in the top the first 85 or 90 breweries in the U.S. Of that new wave of craft breweries. But anyway, even long before that, when I was a kid, I remember going to the beer store with my father. He had his beer fridge in the basement, and we'd go to the beer store. And to me, it was interesting. We always got National Geographic, so I was kind of interested in geography and the world. And he'd be buying beers from all these different countries, and I'd ask him why are they different, just because they come from a different country. He's like, well, they've got different styles, just like they have different food and different music, they have different beer. And I always thought that was really interesting, well before I ever thought about drinking it. And then when I was off at the University of Iowa, I found that you could get just about any kind of beer pretty cheap on a college campus. So I could buy bottles of Chimay at the co-op for about $3.50.
Were you at that point being at the university, were you kind of like a beer snob at that point? Were you like all the other kids are like, just get the Coors Light, Greg?
Total beer snob. Yes, back in my early days. Yes. My father taught me well. It was a lot more interesting to me because not only was the flavor of the beer interesting, but there's a little bit of a backstory to it, and I thought that was pretty cool. So he opened Goose Island in 1988. I joined him. I was an assistant brewer. I was the helper, is what my first boss called me. Victor was our first brewmaster, and I learned brewing, from him, and then went to brewing school, the Siebel Institute, which is still teaching mm-hmm. brewers here in Chicago. Has been for over 100 years. So I was in the graduating class of 1989. And then our first brewer, Victor, left in 1991, and I took over as brewmaster at that point.
And so, yeah, I mean, you mentioned that you were one of the first craft beer breweries of all time. People knew beer to be, and some still to this day listening to this program, it'd be like there's beer, there's light beer, and then there's imported beer. I mean, talk about how that's essentially what craft beer was going against, especially in 1991.
Well, you're absolutely right, Justin. I remember going into bars trying to sell beer when we were just still making it at the Goose Island Brew Pub up at 1800 North Clybourne. And I'd deliver kegs in my Jeep, and I'd say, hey, you guys should really sell some Goose Island beer. It's local. And they're like, yeah, but we've got 8 taps and we can't take off Guinness and we can't take off Bud Light, Miller Light, Coors Light, Old Style, Budweiser, or MGD. And then we've got our like 3 or 4 European lagers we have to keep on. And I'm like, but they're all kind of the same beer. They're like, yeah, but Larry comes in and drinks his Beck's every Tuesday. Well, almost every Tuesday. And what if we didn't have Beck's for Larry? And I'm like, well, get Beck's bottles, put us on tap. And then they put Sam Adams on tap, and we heard the same thing. We said, we've got one craft beer on tap. And that was back when they called it, we got one microbrewery on tap before
right.
they called it craft.
Oh, right.
And then it kind of went through the same thing with wheat beer, and they said, we've already got a wheat beer on tap. Why would we put two on? Same thing with IPA when Goose Island won a gold medal. First of 6 medals at the Great American Beer Festival. We we went into bars and said, hey, why don't you put our IPA on? We just want a gold medal.
Was it hard in the city of Chicago? Because the city of Chicago is known to be a beer town, but it's also known to be a beer town in its own way, meaning, you know, we don't change things.
It is. It is. And we have, you know, there's good and bad, but we've got some rather strict building codes in Chicago, and it makes it a little more expensive to build something out here. So I think in a lot of other towns, breweries got built out that didn't happen in Chicago maybe as early as we're seeing now, happened in places on the West Coast and the Northeast. Really, the big cities, New York, Chicago, L.A., didn't have as much local brewing culture as more the small towns did. So
because of building codes, because of the way it's harder to...
I think it's more expensive, and I think it's it's more competitive. You've got all the big breweries spending money in the big cities. So, we had to make our way, it didn't happen overnight. It took a long time.
For you, I mean, taking over 1991, what was the focus? What was for Goose Island to be the brewmaster of that company? What was the focus? Was it to try and excel at IPAs? Was it to excel and be a better beer than what was on tap? I mean, what were you trying to accomplish back then?
You know, the main thing, Justin, is variety. We wanted to bring a variety. We wanted to bring choice. My father talked about that over and over again. He said, you know, if you go to the store, you can find all these different kinds of cheese, all these different kinds of fruits and vegetables, and all these kinds of cereal or whatever you want to buy. You can buy a huge range of choice. But in beer, it's kind of like pale lager from this brewery or pale lager from that brewery. So we wanted to make a range of beers. And we're kind of doing the same thing right now at Virtue with cider.
You know, let's apply the same logic to cider. I mean, there's more than just cider. There's European cider and maybe another. What are the types of cider that we should be aware of, I guess?
Well, I think, just like in beer, you've got kind of the English brewing culture. You've got the German brewing culture. You've got the Belgian brewing culture. Those are kind of the big three from Europe, you might say. And they all have kind of their idiosyncrasies. And I think cider is kind of that same way. So you've got English cider, which tends to have a little bit more tannin in the finish. And it tends to have some nice apple aroma up front, kind of lead with the apple and finish with tannin. French ciders tend to be a little bit more like Belgian ales. They're a little funkier. Mm-hmm. And they've developed as much flavor from the fermentation as they do from the apples. And then the Spanish ciders are completely different altogether. They are, they're really closer to lemonade than they are English or French cider, in that they tend to be very bright in their fruitiness, very dry and very tart. So really, really interesting.
Is there a type of cider that the American market is gravitating to? I mean, when you say that the French, Belgium, German, English, I mean, is there one that people are like, that's what I like?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at what's gone on in craft beer, while IPA is kind of the hottest style, it's still like 30%. So it's not even a third of the craft beer out there. So really, what's happened in craft beer, I think, and what's made craft beer so successful is because of the wide variety. You go right around the corner to Howell and Hood, and they've got, what do they got, 60 taps, right. 100 taps, you know, and they sell just about every beer they have. You know, every single pint gets pulled, you know, sooner or later in the night, because people want variety now. When you order coffee, You it used to be you would order either large or small, and now you can either go to your big international conglomerate and have it made custom for you with as many shots and whipped cream and sugar and almond milk or whatever you want in it, or you can go to your local roaster and get it from a country, and that's where, like, provenance starts coming in. And I think we've really started to enter the age of provenance, where stuff comes from really matters to people, and it's worth paying a little extra. I had a glass of coffee this morning at my local Botrus coffee roaster on my block in Roscoe Village, and it was from Ecuador. And the guy romanced me about how it's got this nice sweet little bit of pineapple edge to it. You know, and I thought, boy, that's really cool. I know a lot of guys from Ecuador. I'll get the Ecuador.
Greg Hall is my guest tonight. He's a former brewmaster at Goose Island and the founder and CEO of Virtue Cider. We'll take a break for the news. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation about craft beer and craft cider here on The Download. Stay with us. It's right behind there. You can't see it. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the big table tonight, Greg Hall. How about that? Former brewmaster for Goose Island, CEO and founder of Virtue Cider. One of the trailblazers when it comes to craft beer in this town. And craft beer's blown up. I mean, it's so interesting for you to say that a little bit earlier about they used to be called microbreweries. I forgot about that. That's really, they just changed. Why did they change the way that they talked about these?
Well, I think in the early days, what made the breweries different is the size of the breweries. They were so small. And then what changed was it was really more about the beer than about the size of the brewery. You know, when you have breweries on the West Coast like Sierra Nevada get so big. I mean, they're not really anybody's definition of micro anymore.
Right.
But they're still making great beer. So it's really more about craft beer than it is about the size of the brewery. And I think that's the way most drinkers think of that.
Craft beer has exploded in this country in the last couple decades. Goose Island was at the forefront of this. You know, even in the, like we mentioned, the late 80s with the brew pub and the 90s, you guys sort of carved out a niche as being an independent beer here in Chicago. But it wasn't until the early 2000s when, it just exploded. Everybody wanted a 312. Everybody wanted something to do with Goose Island.
Yeah, that was a fun time. That's when momentum really started to shift to craft beer in Chicago, and Goose Island really went on a roll. And I think we figured out some things, too. We started really developing more brands, and, you know, we brought 312 out, and, you know, we figured, hey, if people in the Rocky Mountains can be proud of their beer, why can't people in Chicago be proud of their beer? So, you know, calling it 312 is a little controversial at first, but now I think everybody's pretty...
I totally forgot about how controversial that was.
Pretty used to it, yeah.
You're right. There was this idea that, you know, what was the controversy? You're pandering to the...
You know, I think there were a lot of people, because we didn't really call it Goose Island 312. We just kind of led with 312. And, you know, what that was really strategic in going into the draft accounts where... We already had Goose Island Honkers Ale on tap. We already had Goose Island Seasonal on tap. And a lot of them said, listen, I'm not going to give you a third. Which Goose Island do you want to take off? And we said, well, this isn't Goose Island. This is 312.
I see. Yeah.
So we got a new tap handle.
Business strategy.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of that, I mean, one of the things when Goose Island, when you were met with such fanfare for the brand, for 312, for the existing brands, for the stuff that you were coming up with, there was more demand, and it put a lot of stress on the company. Talk about that, because it's documented that, you know, you quickly had to keep up with the demand, and it put a lot of pressure on Goose Island.
Well, you know, it's always the goal of any business to grow, sometimes when you grow, it doesn't come at the pace that you expect. So you got to figure out what to do. And one of the things we got to a crossroads where we were, you know, we're an urban brewery, and a lot of our friends out in places like Fort Collins, Colorado, yeah. Or out in
California, wherever,
Chico, yeah. California, right. You know, they just buy another 20 acres, you know, of open land right. Next to them and expand the brewery. We're in the middle of an urban area, so we couldn't just build another, you know, 20 acres. You know, we couldn't even buy the place across the street. So we had to figure out how we could grow, and it ended up doing the partnership with AB, and that worked out really well.
Isn't that the point as well, that how big you want to grow? It's not just how you want to grow or where we're going to buy the stuff, but maybe it wasn't in your designs at the beginning to be at that level, and the demand kind of forces you there.
Well, and you know, we my father opened the brewery in 1988, the brew pub, and then we opened the brewery in 1995. And at the time, you know, 50, 60,000 barrels seemed like the final frontier. You know, wow, well, I mean, we could maybe get to that in 20, 30 years. But then all of a sudden things started to blow up. And then not only did brands like our, you know, Hawkers and our seasonals and 3-1-2 blow up, but we started making beers like Matilda and Sophie, mm-hmm. which is named after my daughter. Got to give her a little plug there. and then all the Bourbon County Stout we made. And those beers take a lot more time because they're barrel aged and the fermentation process takes more time. So it kind of constraints on capacity a little bit. And we wanted those beers to grow because those were so fun to brew and so exciting and so different. You know, and one of the questions you were asking me, you know, when the news mm-hmm. was on, was talking about risk.
Right.
And how much risk is there in yeah, craft beer?
Because we have people from the tech sector over here at the Merchandise Mart come on, someone from 1871, and they use the word risk almost as a badge of honor or as a building block for you know, sort of a successful business. Is it the same in craft beer?
I think it's absolutely the same, except there's you know, quite a bit more capital that you're putting on the table in craft beer, and there's quite a bit lower margins, and there's just never the rate of growth that you can have in tech. So in many ways, there's more risk, and there's so much competition now, and there's always been competition from all these companies that are so much bigger than you are. And after all, it's always just kind of a 12-ounce bottle of beer you're selling. So how do you basically mitigate that risk? And I think the natural thing people say is, well, let's make beers that people like, you know, that are safe. And those guys, you know, continue to flounder. And if you look at the guys that came out of Goose Island that have had great success in Chicago, guys like Josh Stieth at Revolution, when he opened Revolution in Logan Square, yeah. you know, that was before Logan Square was cool. That's when it was kind of, wait, where's Logan Square? That, you know, way back then. And everybody thought that might be a little too far to open a brew pub. But, you know, he took that risk and had great success. And then another guy, John Laffler from Off Color Brewing, you know, he opened up and he'd been doing all the barrel-aged beers for Goose Island. Everyone's like, oh, you're going to do barrel-aged beers? He's like, no. And it's like, you're going to make an IPA? No. He's going to make a Goza and all these weird beers that no one's ever had before. And that seemed like a really risky move. But now he's the only one making those, and he's selling them in, I don't know, 40 states or so. So he's having great success.
Is that something that those guys learned from their experiences at Goose Island? Is that something that you as a brewmaster sort of embrace, this idea of trying to think outside the box and not just give the safe option when giving craft beer?
You know, I'd love to think that their time at Goose Island had some influence on them. But I think, you know, you're either naturally an entrepreneur. I think that's a hard thing to learn.
Yeah.
You know, you either have that right brain mentality where you've got more ideas than you do time, or you're the other side and you're kind of always thinking of how you can mitigate risk. But you know, we're doing the same thing with cider. You know, when we came out, our wholesaler and a lot of the investors that we talked to said, okay, you know, the number one cider, you know, when we first opened was Woodchuck still. It's like, is it going to be like Woodchuck? No, not really. It's going to be more European. It's going to be drier. It's going to be barrel-aged. It's going to be funkier. They're like, but who's drinking that? I'm like, well, nobody yet, but that's why we're going to do it.
So, it's
tough. We're going to take the lead.
Yeah, and it's tough because you have to raise capital. So there are people who are like, well, I don't see that happening. Talk about the same lessons learned with Virtue because, you know, it's well-documented as well about, you know, a couple years into Virtue. Demand again, an explosion for it. We just talked about the off the charts for European style cider in the States. And in some ways, it was much, much sort of bigger growth than you expected.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we got into it, cider was less than 1/3 of 1% of the overall beer market. And then shortly after we got in, Sam Adams reformulated their hardcore cider and called it Angry Orchard and started pushing it really hard and had a lot of success with it. And then Woodchuck got bought, and then AB came in and released a couple ciders, including Stella Cedra, which is still doing well, and Miller released Smith and Forge and spent a lot of money on that, and they also bought Crispin. So all of a sudden, you know, the big guys were in cider, and so demand went up much quicker than we anticipated it would. And we kind of went about our way doing things the way we wanted to, by buying local apples and fermenting them, you know.
Having your own farm.
Having our own farm. Right. Yeah, we've got a, you know, we bought a farm up in Michigan. You know, I said, hey, we at Goose Island, we were kind of landlocked being in the city. I didn't want to make the same mistake at Virtue. I wanted to go and do it on a farm in England. And that kind of goes back, too, to the early days of me being a brewer. When I went over to Europe for inspiration in the late 80s and early 90s, you go to the great brewing cities of Europe. You go to London and Munich and Prague and Brussels, because all the great beers were made in the city. But when I left Goose to be a cider maker and I went over to Europe, I didn't go to the cities. I didn't even go to the towns. I went to the country, because that's where the cider's made. It's made on the farm by the farmer. And a lot of times the farmer grows his own apples, and just as many times he buys his apples from his neighbors, but he makes it right there on the farm. And it's, you know, it's a longer process than making beer. You know, first of all, if you plant barley in the spring, you know, you harvest it in the fall. If you plant hops in the spring, you harvest them in the fall. If you plant an apple tree in the spring, you know, in the fall you have a stick, you know, that still has maybe 10 leaves on it. You got to wait about 5 to 7 years before you can actually get fruit off of it. So it takes a little longer time. If you want to make beer, you basically call up your barley and your malt broker and your hop broker, and you order malt and hops, and you get deliveries, you know, 50 weeks a year, maybe more. If you want to make cider with apples, you know, apples, I know they've got them at the store year-round, but they only come off the tree in the fall.
Right.
So
seasonal,
right now, we're not making cider. There's no apples. So we are...
Is that something for you as a brewmaster? Because I read an interview where you said that being a brewmaster is all about control. It's about controlling. You know to the ingredients, and you're in control of the recipe. When you have to work with seasonal... like apples that are in season, and like right now you can't do it. Does it mess with that concept, the concept of control?
Oh, completely. You have no control, you know, and that I think is the brilliance of it. A cider is a expression of the fruit, and not just the fruit, not the variety of fruit alone, but, you know, what time of year it was picked. You know, if it was picked in September, or if it was left on the tree until October, if it was, you know, the same tree, if you're picking fruit off it 3 weeks apart, you're going to get different fruit. And then after it's picked, you might press it right away when it's fresh, or you might let it sit on the dock for a month and let it start to get overripe and soften up. And then again, you get different juice. And if you're getting Macintosh from a farmer down the road, a mile down the road, and then you get Macintosh from a farmer 4 miles down the road, well, the other, you know, one might be on 30-year-old trees and one might be on 70-year-old trees.
It's a difference, right?
Why in the world would you expect those apples to be exactly the same? Of course they're not going to be the same. They get different amounts of light, different amounts of rain, different amounts of wind every single season. So they are different. And I liken it to music. When you're making beer, it's like playing a symphony. You have a lot of things going on, but you know what? Every note has to be played at the right time, in the right place, by the right guy. And if it's all played in order exactly the way you want it played, it's going to sound exactly the way you want it to sound. And I look at cider a lot more like jazz. You get a guy like Thelonious Monk playing a song like Round Midnight, probably played it 5,000 times. Did he ever play it the same twice?
Right, no.
No way. Now, every time it was Around Midnight, nobody's going to think it was, you know, Jack Ying or T for Two or one of his other songs. It was always around midnight, but it was always a little bit different. And I think that's pretty exciting and pretty fun about what we're doing with cider right now.
Greg Hall is my guest at the big table. He's the former brewmaster at Goose Island. He's the CEO and founder of Virtue Cider. You know, as we wrap up here, the bigger questions, I mean, when you think about the Goose Island brand and what's happened since the sale to Anheuser-Busch, I mean, what's the emotion that comes with it? Because now, I mean, even more than 5 years ago, you can find 312 in every city in this country. You can find, I mean, it has become sort of a symbol for the city of Chicago.
Yeah, it has. And that's pretty cool. And that certainly makes both my father and I very proud of that. But I think what has happened is it's certainly grown beyond our wildest dreams. And it continues to grow. And the demand continues to increase. And the quality is still extraordinarily high. And a lot of my friends that were there when I left are still there. Many of the friends that were there when I left have gone off to open new breweries mm-hmm. or become brewmasters for somebody else. And then there's a whole bunch of new guys there, that some of which I know, some I haven't even met yet.
As you know, I'm trying to think about what it would be like. I mean, for you to have that much investment in Goose Island, to sell it, do you still consider it your product when you think of 312 and where it's at? Do you go, ah, there's my beer, or is it somebody else's?
Well, you know, when you go off to college, you know, you're there for 4 years, well, maybe five, maybe six, but anyway, you're there, and then you finish up and graduate. You know, I'll always be an Iowa Hawkeye. But I left, you know, and I didn't want to stay there for the rest of my life. So now I look at Virtue, as where I'm at now. This is my postgraduate work after it taking me 23 years to graduate from Goose Island.
For Virtue, for Goose, for all the two companies that you've worked on for, I mean, now, 3 decades in the city of Chicago, you know, do you think about your lasting impact, your family's lasting impact on beer and cider and sort of libations in general? In this, I mean, this is such a tremendous beer town; it always has been. And do you ever think about you and your family's sort of relationship to that history?
Oh well, absolutely. You know, I think of. You know, my father made a choice in the mid-80s to change careers, and that changed the course of brewing history in Chicago with Goose Island opening and him having the fortitude when there wasn't demand for craft beer, when nobody wanted or cared about craft beer except for a few old, you know, balding, bearded guys with beer bellies. That was all that we had in the early days. And to stick with it and to trust Victor and trust me, trust the brewers and not say, hey, this isn't working, make light beer because that's what people want. You know, he never said that. So he had great faith in the brewers and he always did. And I think that is a huge testament to him. And, you know, not only has Goose Island made an impact, but one of the things that I know we're both so proud of is all the people who used to work at Goose Island who are now brewing, you know, around Chicago.
It's like a tree, like a coaching tree.
I mentioned John Lafler and Josh Deeth. Pretty much everybody, it seems like, at Revolution worked at one time at Goose. You know, looking at Peace, looking at many of the local breweries, Motor Row. There's so many breweries around here that have got a tie to Goose Island. And then even further, you've got some of the best breweries in the country that got their start or one of their first brewing jobs at Goose. And that kind of makes it a pretty, pretty cool family tree.
Greg Hall is the CEO and founder of Virtue Cider, which is out now. I mean, it's out. It's the, you got the new bottles that are out now that you're holding in your hand, and you can hear it, the Virtue. What is the drink? It's
the Michigan Brute. We are just releasing. Got a big party tomorrow night. If you can sneak away, over at Money Gun, 660
place, yeah.
West Lake. Yeah,
I was just in there like a week and a half ago. It's
Bruce
good.
Finkelman's yeah. new place. So Brucey and I go back a ways. He's a great friend, and it's a great great bar in the near kind of West Loop area.
That's tomorrow night?
Yeah, so we're going to be debuting our brand new 12-ounce bottles of Virtue Michigan Brut. So it's all Michigan apples. Nice dry cider. And then we're going to have it again on tap at Pitchfork Music Festival in a couple weeks. So
Greg Hall,
you'll be able to try it there.
Founder, CEO of Virtue Cider and the former brewmaster at Goose Island. Thanks so much for spending some time at the big table tonight.
Absolutely. And one last thing, I'd love to invite everybody up. If you're coming up to Michigan, going to the beaches of South Haven or Saugatuck, we're about 10 minutes away in Fenville. So
there you go, Fenville.
Come get a pint of cider with me. Cheers.
That was fun. Greg Hall, always good to have someone of stature. We need more brewmasters on the show, Pete.
Yes.
Yes. All right, coming up, Martin Starr is going to join us. Also, Sam Benjanovic is going to join us from WGN Sports to talk about a rumor that is ripping through social media that Dwayne Wade is coming to Chicago.
Can I break in, Justin, just briefly?
Yeah, of course.
It looks as though it's no longer a rumor.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding.
Wow.
Yeah. Multiple outlets reporting that Dwayne Wade will sign with the Bulls.
You know what? I take credit for this. I don't know if you heard my rant at the beginning of the show, but I said, you are from Robbins. Act like a man from Robbins. And stop screwing around. And he did, see? He must have heard me.
You went to Marquette, damn it.
Don't you do
you
this.
You are a warrior.
Don't you do this to
Which
your...
they're not calling
wow,
it.
Wow, unbelievable. Right. All right, we'll get to that in just a second here. Coming up, Martin Starr and Sam Panionovich will talk more about the Dwayne Wade news. Wow, crazy. Stay with us. Class back in session, so we're up to the grade. In 2 years, Dwayne became Dwayne Wade. And hey, please don't starve me. I'm like Gnarls Barkley. Me, Charles Barkley. I'm Pop the Barkley. I'm shocked. I am totally shocked that the news reported is going wild right now on social media. Several outlets reporting that Dwayne Wade will sign with the Chicago Bulls. Okay, there you go. What an amazing... And to give Gar Forman a little bit of credit, he did not say rebuild. He said retool. This is not getting younger. This is not getting athletic. What is this? Sam Panjanovic joins us. He's at the cell right now. Sam, I'm sure the buzz in the media room there is pretty intense.
What happened? I just woke up.
So let's talk about this. This is not something that we... That we thought was even possible. How did Dwayne Wade end up in Chicago?
Well, the 13-year marriage with Miami is over. Crazy to think that Pat Riley loses a game of hardball again. He tried to play hardball with LeBron James last year. Didn't work. Tried to play hardball with Dwayne Wade this year. Didn't work. Offered him about 2 years and $40 million. Dwayne Wade was not about to take a pay cut. Even though he's made $153 million in his career, he still feels like he's going to cash in on this salary spike. I mean, the cap is up to $94 million. He sees dollar signs, but Justin, realistically, he wanted to be paid. And that's what it comes down to. You look at what Kevin Durant's going to do. You look at what LeBron James is going to do with a one-year deal. He wants to be paid. And when you look around that Miami roster, Chris Bosh with the blood clots, Hassan Whiteside, who just got a max deal, not really a team player. They lost Lou Alden. They lost Joe Johnson. So that Miami roster is just awful right now. And the game of chicken... The ultimate game of chicken, I guess. The Bulls wanted the draft Wade in 03. They tried to trade up. Didn't happen. They tried to sign him in 2010. Didn't happen. So they finally get their guy. About 13 years later, Dwayne Wade is coming back to Chicago, the city that he grew up in.
How great is it? That Now, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the idea that now Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade replace Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah in Chicago. Gar Forman said retool, not rebuild. We didn't believe him, but this is definitely a retool. Uh-oh, I think we're losing Sam here. Everyone's going crazy with the we'll come back to Sam Panjanovic. But I have to say, like, it's unbelievable to me. I'm in total shock. The Chicago Bulls, by all reports, have signed or are going to sign Dwayne Wade from the Miami Heat to come play in Chicago. This is pending any trades that need to clear up cap space. The Bulls don't necessarily have enough cap space until they trade, so who's going to be traded? We'll find that out as well. Sam Panionovich back on the line with us. Sam, you there?
I am here, yes. Okay, so I was gathering more information for you.
So let's. I said retool. Gar Forman said retool, not rebuild. I mean, this is pretty. What does this mean for the future of the Chicago Bulls? They seem a little bit rent to players, but at the same time, Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade, not a bad combo.
Well, you said it already. They said they wanted to get younger, more athletic. That's a boldface lie because they bring in a 34-year-old guard in Dwayne Wade with dead knee issues. They brought in Rajon Rondo, who's older than Dwayne Wade. Derrick Rose also has knee issues. So they didn't get younger. They didn't get more athletic, but they also didn't rebuild. I mean, this is essentially, I guess this is what retool means. Go ahead and stun the basketball landscape. I don't know what it means for the Bulls on the floor, though, because you bring in Fred Hoiberg, pace and space, up-tempo, shoot a lot of threes. I mean, these guys are all ball hawks.
Right.
Wade and Butler and Rondo. Fred Hoiberg has a pacemaker. I don't know. I'm assuming he's going to have his heart medication near him at all times because you also have, you know, a guy in Jimmy Butler who called out his coach last year, year number one. Rondo has been a coach killer the last couple of stops. So I don't know. I mean, you would think that, you know, the championship pedigree would rub off. Wade's won a title 3 times, a finals MVP, a 12-time All-Star, right. Olympic gold medalist. But right now, I still don't think this team is a top 5 team in the East. I mean, they win a 6, 7, 8 seed. They go to a first-round playoff series. People are still going to go. They've had the highest attendance the last 7 years in the league. The Bulls are probably the biggest cash cow in basketball. You know people are going to buy these jerseys, these number 3 weight jerseys. Yeah. I'm sorry, Doug McDermott. You're going to have to give up that number 3, whether you like it or not. but people are still going to go. They're still going to buy gear, and they're still going to watch.
Okay.
And that's what the Bulls are all about.
The big thing that I think is – of interest is that this is all pending whether or not the Bulls can clear enough cap space with trades and releases and things of that nature. What does that mean for the roster? Are we going to see some Chicago Bulls players that we know and love shipped out to accommodate Dwayne Wade?
Well, the Jose Calderon era is over. that started when they traded Derrick Rose in New York, got Calderon back. He's reportedly going to be dealt to the Brooklyn Nets, and this just came across a couple of reports saying that Mike Dunleavy is going to join LeBron James in Cleveland. So those are your two players. Calderon made about $8 million, Dunleavy about $5 million. That's $13 million in total. So you give away $25 million a year. You give them 2 years guaranteed, a third year maybe an option, maybe a mutual type deal. But the dollars and cents line up. I mean, if they made those moves and that all happens by midnight tonight, the Bulls' salaries will be about $70 million. Wade makes about $25 million. The cap is 95. So you're right there. You're right up against it. So it all makes sense for dollars and cents that, you know, Dwayne Wade is going to come here and they're not going to be under the floor. They won't really be over the luxury line. They're going to be right in the middle. And, you know, the question now is how will everybody get along together in the locker room and how will they play together on the floor?
Well, okay, let's say that they all buy into Fred Hoiberg's scheme and it works out in terms of the players and their baggage. But Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler essentially play the same position. What does that mean for a team? I mean, I guess this is the new day and age of the NBA where everyone plays the same position anyway, right?
Well, you'll have Rondo at the point. You'll have Dwayne Wade at the 2 guard, and Jimmy essentially moves to the 3. But like you said, basketball is pretty much as positionless as it's been ever. So I don't know exactly how this fast-paced, ball-moving, whipping-around-the-court offense is going to work with these guys who all like to dominate the ball. You know, the question isn't so much I have about this year, JK. It's about what they do next year. Because this year, I still think they're in transition, obviously. They lose Pau Gasol, Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Etuan Moore, Aaron Brooks, Mike Dunleavy. I mean, you're losing a whole bunch of guys from this past season. The question is about the future. You know, Dwayne Wade is very well liked in basketball. He's going to recruit. You look at guys, you know, Blake Griffin is a free agent next year. Chris Paul is a free agent next year. LeBron James could opt out next season. You know, LeBron once said that him, Wade, and Paul would all play together.
I'm not sure it's going to happen.
But I can only picture Gar Forman eating cookies and milk thinking about that situation.
Oh, my gosh, Panio, you're killing me here, man. That would be – could you imagine? I mean, this is what I was barking about at the end of last week. and even at the beginning of this week, that this is a big market for basketball. It's a big market team. We should be attracting big market players. Dwayne Wade fits the bill. If he can recruit, we can have that kind of experience where free agents come to Chicago to dominate the league. I think this is a great move for Gar Forman and the Bulls. The only question I have is whether or not there's enough gas left in the tank for them to compete late into the spring.
Well, it's kind of like when a pitcher in his early 30s gets a seven-year deal. It's not about the whole seven-year window. It's about the first couple. It's about one, two, and three. And can you help the team go far in the first half of the deal, the first couple of years of a deal? You're not going to have Dwayne Wade going out there leading the charge at age 37 in the last year of this deal. This is about him coming in, setting a tone in year one, and most importantly, it's about who he can bring in the future. That's the plan here. Now, that doesn't mean the plan is going to work, and I just threw out a very interesting situation. I don't buy that for 1 second. I don't really have faith in Gar Forman to build a championship roster. I haven't. I don't believe what he says. I think a lot of the things that are floating around right now are still up in the air. But I guess, you know, to get inside that old hamster wheel, that is the plan. You're going to try and get older guys to come in here, fill these roster spots, and then you're going to try and land a big free agent. But I'll tell you what, this feels a whole lot like a White Sox move. You know, Ken Griffey, Manny Ramirez, Kevin Youkilis, David Wells, Roberto Alomar, Carl Leverett, you know, guys that are just near, you know, the 16th hole, and you try and exude some of that ability out of them when they're late in their career. I don't think Dwayne Wade's going to be an all-star next year, but it's not about how he plays. It's how he gets along with the group and who he can bring in the future. That's
well,
what
we saw him.
About.
I mean, we saw him have a tremendous playoff run, because he knows how to play in the playoffs. That's been a concern for the Chicago Bulls. A big question here. So they get rid of Rose, Noah, and Gasol, and they bring in Wade, Rondo, and they draft Valentine, right? Is it more about who they lost than who they gained? Meaning, you know, it's kind of like a 50-50 split when you're talking about talent, Rose and Noah, but was it just the point where they're like, we're done with these guys? They're a different generation. They're the past. We need to just move on from Rose and Noah?
Yeah, I mean, everything changed April 2012 when Derrick Rose gets hurt. I mean, they were locked into that five-year contract the year he got hurt, so there was really nothing you could do about that. Nobody wanted to take on that deal early in the deal, so you're finally able to unload him. He's got 1 year left on his deal. That was really, you know, the final domino. Once you trade Derrick Rose, you knew that that era was over, and that's probably the second-best era of Bulls basketball. You know, you think of Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Luol Deng, Tom Thibodeau. I mean, that's over. That ship is all but gone. You're going to have one guy from that initial Bulls group in that 2010-2011 season. You've got Taj Gibson. I mean,
yeah,
that's
if
the
he makes
lone
it.
Pioneer
yeah.
from that group. But that being said, you're going to need to keep him because he's one of the only guys that's actually tough. So you're looking at a veteran leadership group now. It's going to be Butler. It's going to be Wade. It's going to be Gibson. And I don't, you know, clarify or classify Rajon Rondo as a leader, but that's the plan here. I still think the Bulls are a 5-6 seed. They're still probably going to get trounced in the playoffs next season, but who the hell knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, but you know what? I don't know, man. I'm a sucker for drama, and the idea that the Bulls with a Dwayne Wade could take on LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers in any sort of playoff matchup, seven-game series, it's worth a watch. It's
well, if they're going to shoot an arrow in LeBron's Achilles, I mean, I'm all for it. I mean, that's pretty much what's going to take to get him out of there in the Eastern Conference playoffs. But I wouldn't have high hopes for this season. I think it's a head-scratching move. It's a gamble. You're rolling the dice here. You're hitting on 19 at the blackjack table. But like I said, it's all about staying competitive, and it's all about getting to the playoffs and making that money and selling off that United Center. The Bulls, since 1990, have been in the top three in attendance. They haven't been under 19,000 since 2001, too, when they drafted Curry and Chandler. People are going to go. People are going to buy nachos and beer and burgers and pay to park, and they're going to do everything to fill the Bulls' pockets. And that's what it's all about, because if they bottom out, people might give up finally. This is a chance to keep them somewhat competitive. They are not a top three team in the league, but they still have some value in guys coming in, and I guarantee you people are going to be excited to come watch Dwayne Wade play on the west side of Chicago.
Well, Sam Panionovich, I can't argue with you because you were right on about this year's team, but the homer in me says number one seed, number two seed.
I should have played basketball. Yeah. I'm so excited I quit. I quit in high school. I'm going to turn back time.
Sam Panionovich, WGN Sports, thanks for checking in.
See ya.
Yes, sir, this is what I'm made for. To go hard in the paint like D-Wade or D-Rose from the same streets that we rose. International heroes.
I'm pumping my fist at the people walking by on Michigan Avenue like, we did it. We got Dwayne Wade. I know you haven't heard yet. Let me tell you, Dwayne Wade coming to Chicago. I told you it was going to happen. You were all doubting Gar and Pax. And here I was saying, nope, nope. They'll pull a rabbit out of the hat. You heard him. He did in no rebuild. He said retool. Please don't play back the tapes. What an amazing night for Chicago sports. The rumors are turning true as several outlets around the country, including the Miami Herald, announcing that Dwayne Wade has chosen the Chicago Bulls for his next destination. He spent his entire career in Miami, but he's coming home. He was born and raised in Robbins.
Yeah.
And he is coming home to the Chicago area to play for the Chicago Bulls. Details of the contract not announced. The Bulls are apparently clearing cap space to make this work. The two trades that are in the works right now, which are insignificant, really. Mike Dunleavy going to Cleveland to play with LeBron James and the Cavaliers. And the other one was, I don't even know what
Calderon?
Yeah, Jose Calderon, who didn't even play here, moving to the New Jersey Nets. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I think this is a Chi-Town stand up. This is huge. I'm all in. As my brother just texted me, I'm getting texts blown out of everywhere. It's, love it. Back in. That should be the, you know, they have the slogans, you know, that
yeah,
should
like
be
hashtag back in.
Back in.
Yeah.
A week ago, it was all out. We're all out. We're going home. Now we're back in. Great move by the Chicago Bulls to somehow pry Dwayne Wade from the Miami Heat, and Pat Riley makes it even sweeter.
What is he going to get hurt?
Oh, come on!
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
All right, there are two. Here's what I would say.
I'm happy. I'm happier today than I was yesterday.
Here's what I would say to that: the reality of what's going to happen on the court, say in February, versus the reality of winning free agency sweepstakes are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that this is something that the Chicago Bulls are just not used to, winning in any sort of free agency situation where we go and present the PowerPoint and the Lovables are waiting at the airport for Tracy McGrady. It just doesn't, you know what I mean? It doesn't work that way. And so for us to win in that regard and put on paper a team that gets Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade to come to Chicago and play with Jimmy Butler and the other pieces that are already in place, it feels good. It feels good to be a sort of wanted destination.
For two old guys?
Yeah, but, I mean, Dwayne Wade is holding court in New York with teams from all over, including the Cleveland Cavaliers, trying to come to him and say, we want you to come play here. So regardless of him, what his age is, what he is, I would say, you know, maybe besides Kevin Durant, who went to Golden State, the second highest free agent in this summer's free agency, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can only imagine between shooting beef jerky commercials what Stephen A. Smith is saying right now. Right?
I wonder
it's
what.
It's all about putting butts in the seats in Chicago with the loss of D. Rose. They had to get D. Wade. That's good old good beef jerky from Umberto.
I am all for it. I think bringing Dwayne Wade home, I think there's sentiment and emotion to the idea that he's coming back to Chicago. We had that with Derrick Rose, the idea of a kid from Inglewood who rose out of poverty and was able to be the number one pick and play for his hometown Chicago Bulls. The only other player that has Chicago on his back is Dwayne Wade. You think about all the players that have played in Chicago or played in universities, there are none that have the swagger of Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, but you know what, though? You identify Dwayne Wade with the Miami Heat
of
like
course,
you would
yeah.
Larry Bird with the Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know Bird's from Indiana, but I don't picture him in a Indiana Pacers jersey. I mean, I picture him in a Boston Celtics
absolutely.
Jersey.
No, absolutely. But I would make the argument, though, that Larry Bird, going back to be the coach or the general manager of the Indiana Pacers, is a roots thing. It goes back to – went back to Indiana. It's where he went to college, right? So the idea of him going back home has some significant value to someone who's an Indiana Pacers fan.
Yeah.
For me in Chicago, I'm just excited that a kid from Chicago is coming back to play here. And frankly, I'm just excited for national audiences to be interested in what we're doing in Chicago.
Yeah, they might get a Christmas Day game.
We might get
now.
A Christmas Day game, a Cleveland Cavaliers-Chicago Bulls matchup. Think about that. You know, the Cavaliers and the Heat only played each other twice a year because they were in different divisions. Three times, maybe. Four, you know, because it's the East. But this is the Central Division. This is going to be Cleveland and Chicago at each other. It's going to be LeBron, Dwayne Wade, their whole saga and drama playing out, you know, on a Tuesday night in January.
I wonder if the Bulls are going to do what the Cubs sort of did, similar to what the Cubs did when they brought Greg Maddux back. I know Greg Maddux was on the team at one point, different than Dwayne Wade, but when Greg Maddux came back, they totally kind of forgot about all those middle great years with Atlanta and pretended like he was a Hall of Famer with the Cubs.
Right.
I think the Bulls should do the same thing. Hall of Famer. Bulls Hall of Famer.
Now, here's a great question. It's too early for this. But does Dwayne Wade get the final call in the lineup? Or do you go Jimmy Butler? We're already starting drama. Meaning, like, Edgar from Chicago, Derrick Rose, Michael Jordan, whatever it was. But it's got to be Dwayne Wade, right?
Yeah, I go Dwayne Wade, yeah.
You're like, and from Robbins, Dwayne Wade. I need to call the front office over there at the Bulls and get a bid in for the graphics and the call. I feel like I have ideas for how they can make that better. I think we take advantage of the fact that we were down in the dumps 6 days ago. Everybody was thinking it was Valentine's team and we were going to be rebuilding for six years. It was going to be the old Jalen Rose, Donyell Marshall days of Chicago Bulls basketball. But we have been taken out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Rajon Rondo, Dwayne Wade, and now we are this close to being in Sprite commercials. Just think, they have one or two good, a good start. They have a strong start, like the Cubs and the White Sox. They're going to be in every sort of baller commercial that's on TV about sneakers and headphones.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. This is. I would. Oh, imagine. Lights go off.
Yeah.
And now, your Chicago Bulls. And then right there, I do a little record scratch, and then it becomes like a new rap song. Maybe Carlos Boozer could do it for me. But I think it's got to be Dwayne Wade.
Yeah. Richards High School.
From Richards High School.
Mm-hmm.
You get the drums to come out. I'm telling you, man. Like I said, I'm back. Back in. Hashtag back in. Best part about this story is that Dwayne Wade is sitting in on the Regis and Kathy show, or Kathy and Michael Strahan, whatever they call it now. Kelly Ripa.
Live.
Live.
Yeah, because
he's the special guest tomorrow.
Maybe he was just kidding. He's going to be the host, the new host for
Psych
Live.
But I mean, he's going to be on tomorrow and they're going to be like, you made a decision. He's like, I'm going to play for the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, that'll be pretty cool.
That's pretty cool, right? Like I'm saying, like a little bit of celebrity.
Yeah.
Bring some celebrity here. Derek was kind of anti-celebrity. He didn't even want it. Now we got Dwayne Wade who's sitting in to be a guest host with Kelly Ripa, our shooting guard. Love it.
Did you ever see Wade's website?
Does he have a good website?
It's good. You can buy a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, it's pretty cool.
Well, I'm very excited about this move. Don't bring me down, callers and texters, with your old shooting percentage, salary cap nonsense. This is just straight up pure celebrity worship on the part of Justin Kaufman. I am in love with Dwayne Wade coming to play for the
Chicago
Bulls.
All right, fan.
I love it. All right. Welcome back to the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest picks his television projects well. Martin Starr has been a part of some of the best television of this generation. He's played a sarcastic caterer, Robin DeBeers, on the Starz comedy Party Down, and he just wrapped up season 3 of HBO's Silicon Valley, in which he plays Guilfoyle, a computer programmer with Pied Piper. And, of course, he played Bill.
I don't want to go.
Why not? Everyone wants to go to a makeup party.
It's a makeup party?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to French kiss Cindy, are you, Sam? French kissing is gross. I wouldn't French kiss in a million years.
And why the hell not?
Hello, germs, spit, mucus, old bits of food. That's just to name a couple. There's a lot of things in there.
That was a clip from the cult favorite Freaks and Geeks. Martin Starr has pioneered a new genre in geek chic, starring on the shows above, but also in movies like Knocked Up, Adventureland, and Superbad. And just this month, it was announced that Starr has joined the cast of Spider-Man Homecoming, set to come out next year. Martin Starr joins us now on The Download. Martin, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me here in Chicago.
Let's talk about Silicon Valley, wrapped up its third season. Congratulations on that. A tremendous ensemble. You know, a lot of great Chicagoans on that show, T.J. Miller, Kumail, Tom Middleditch, people that we've known through have come up through the ranks here in Chicago. For you to be involved in a show like Silicon Valley, what makes a great ensemble?
Team players are very necessary. So I think it's a really good thing that we all get along so well and we all really want each other to do their best. It's makes for a really good environment for creativity.
Do you find yourself gravitating towards scripts and projects that are going to be more ensemble-based, or is that something that just plays out once you get to set?
I think I've just gotten really fortunate to be a part of some really great ensemble TV, for sure, and movies as well. But, you know, Freaks and Geeks and Party Down and now Silicon Valley have all had really incredible casts. I mean, I think everyone on those shows were completely and are, you know, very talented individuals, but also the fact that we all got along so well and we happened to be, you know, like-minded in what we wanted out of the opportunities we have, out of acting, out of creating. I think there's a like-mindedness in all three scenarios where, you know, we all really love to perform and love the experience. So we wanted everyone else to do their best as well. You know, it wasn't really competitive in a way that was detrimental to the creative process.
Well, for you, I mean, you've played such great characters in those ensembles. Guilfoy is a perfect example of that. Roman on Party Down, and of course, Bill, all of which are in the same vein of this sort of deadpan, sarcastic approach. How different are those characters from the real Martin Starr?
I mean, there's a little bit of me in everything I do, so hopefully I'm not as miserable as some of the characters I've played, but I think I'm a lot happier guy. I tend to smile a lot more in real life, so that's a difference already.
For you, I mean, being 16 years old when you started on Freaks and Geeks, talk about that experience, about being able to bring that kind of character, to bring Bill to life at such a young age.
It was really the first time that I had an opportunity to sink my teeth into a character that I got that much to play with, that was that involved and in depth. You know, I think the most I had really done up until that point, you know, the characters that I played with were all in class and in the improv classes that I took growing up and that kind of stuff. So it was a lot different going in every week and kind of playing in this voice. I really lucked out, you know, not only to bring to life someone who I think there's a lot of heart in that character, mm-hmm. and in the show in general, there's so much. But I tend to find that the people who connected with that show and that character in particular, you know, have, you know, a deep sensitivity that connected with him specifically.
Are you surprised that fans of that show and people have connected with that, even, you know, as we think about it now, to almost, you know, 15, 16 years later, at the level in which they did? I mean, to be a cult favorite, Freaks and Geeks, is pretty remarkable.
There are so many things that I think are not fully appreciated, you know, at their time. The Big Lebowski was considered a failure at the time that it was released. You know, I think we got lucky to be able to make the show all the way through. I think that's quite a fortunate scenario for us, because they, at the time, the guy who was pressing the buttons and making the decisions didn't really even want us to make 18 episodes, which we ended up doing. It really, you know, Judd and Paul were very aware that we were going to get canceled any second. So we were lucky to even get out one full season.
For you to be 16 years old on that show, surrounded by, you know, the ensemble that was on that show that have, you know, moved on and done great things as well. And like you just mentioned, Paul and Judd, talk about that almost being as your training. I mean, you're training to be able to take your work to the next level. What was that experience like to be around such creative people? And how did it inform you as you moved into adulthood as an actor?
The people on that show I learned a lot from in so many ways. I think, you know, fundamentally as a human being, I mean, I was 16, I was very impressionable. And I learned a lot about, you know, what it was to be a man and to grow up, you know, in ways that I hadn't yet, even though I'd been around a lot of adults. I think there were some ways in which I was an adult already and other ways that I really needed to figure things out. And I was allowed that there. But also being a part of, like, you know, these really wonderfully written, beautifully like landscaped, well cast shows, to have been a part of those has really helped me in the way that I kind of structure writing now. I've been working on, you know, writing my own TV, and it's really given me, it's given me a lot of lessons in how to do it. Not to say that in any way I can do it as well as they did, but I will certainly try.
As, you know, an actor and writer in Hollywood, do you find yourself having to fit into one category? Can you be a successful writer if you're also a successful actor or director? Talk about the relationship between writing your own stuff and acting in Hollywood.
It's now kind of an imperative. When I was growing up, it wasn't really. You know, I think the last generation of just comedic actors came just before me. Like, Jim Carrey was probably the last, mm-hmm. you know, he works just as an actor for the most part, but the people that come after, like Seth, you know, creates and generates his own work. I think Judd, that's also part of the principles that Judd bestowed upon everyone around him. You see Jason doing it, Franco doing it. He saw that as an imperative in being able to control what you do.
Was that something when you were younger that you recognized you wanted to do, to write your own material? Or is that something that you learned from working with Judd and the actors around you?
It's definitely something that I saw more in Judd. I always liked to write, but it wasn't necessarily in storytelling and scripts. I would write my own silly little short stories or whatever, but it wasn't really in the form of script writing. And so channeling that energy into this has been really fun for me.
One thing that I love about your career is you've been able to balance regular work on television, even mainstream television, showing up in spots, you know, at sitcoms, things like that, with a career where you're doing a lot of independent work. You're doing short films, you know, it seems like every other year, you know, you're showing up with a project at Sundance or the independent film festivals. Talk about how you do that. How are you able to craft time to be able to be an actor in those mainstream projects and have projects on the side?
There's a lot of time in the year. And in Silicon Valley, for Silicon Valley, we only shoot 4 months out of the year, so we get a lot done in a short amount of time, and or maybe even 3 months, but right around there. It gives me a lot of time to do the other things that I want to do, and fortunately, those opportunities are there, so I'm lucky to be able to do those things.
Is it important to you to be able to balance those things, is not to just sort of go out and try to be in whatever, you know, CBS sitcom it is at the time, or to balance it with your own projects or something that you want to stretch yourself artistically?
I've been pushing myself more to work with my writing partner, Matt Bush. We have been writing together for a while. So that's what I try to spend my time doing when I'm not working on a movie during the summer or I'm working on Silicon Valley.
What was it like? I mean, for you, you've worked with such tremendous, you know, visionaries when you talk about Judd Apatow, but now you're working with Mike Judge. Talk about what you've learned from working on Silicon Valley that you didn't know before.
How different genius comedic minds can be. It's, I mean, not only with the cast, who I think are all incredibly talented, but to see the difference between, like, Mike Judge and Alec Berg, who are both absolutely genius in the way that they create comedy in their own brains and lay that out in a script or, you know, for people to perform. They're both so different. They're kind of opposites in some ways. So for me, it's been really unique here to be able to see them. I suppose there was something similar. There was a similar relationship between Judd and Paul, in some ways similar and in other ways polar opposites. I just was so young at that point, I don't think I was recognizing the process. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the big news this month is that you signed on for Spider-Man Homecoming, the big Marvel movie next summer. You know, that's a new experience for you as well, working in sort of blockbuster movies. Are you excited about branching out into doing something in that realm as opposed to the projects you've done in the past?
One of the things that excited me from the beginning was that John Daly, who was also on Freaks and Geeks, wrote it. So there's I'm excited about this group of people. They're all immensely talented that are working on it. So it's definitely fun. I you know, the movie's called Spider-Man. So it's about, you know, it's clear that it's about one particular guy. And right. I'm not that guy. So
you're not that guy.
Don't get your hopes up about how much I'm in the movie. But
we'll throw.
I'm definitely enjoying the process.
We'll throw viewing parties here in Chicago for you.
I think if you edit it down to just my parts.
Yeah, right. We could do that. What I love about, we've talked to actors and, you know, writers before, and one of the things that always seems to pull out of the conversation is relationships. And in your case, I mean, you've mentioned some of the people, even the Spider-Man writer, and talking about your relationship with Judd and the projects you've done since Freaks and Geeks. Talk about how important it is to have good relationships as a comedic actor and writer in Hollywood.
For so many reasons, it's important. I mean, being friends with people that you want to work with and that you love and want to see succeed and likewise want the same for you is, especially by, I suppose, in a creative environment that's so riddled with negativity and focus that isn't around the creative process. It's around the financial stream of income that comes because of the creative process. So, you know, having the right people around you to help you focus on what's important and remind you what's important is really valuable.
Martin Starr just wrapped up season 3 of Silicon Valley on HBO, playing the character Guilfoyle. Martin, thanks so much for taking some time out to talk to us tonight. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me here in Chicago.
Martin Starr, I love that guy. He is such a great comedic actor. To watch him on shows like Party Down and Freaks and Geeks, and then to see him have another star turn on Silicon Valley, it's great.
Is Party Down available anywhere anymore? Is it on, like, on demand on Stars?
Yeah, it is. And I don't get Stars as part of my cable package for some reason. Like, it's just not. I have that one package where it's not the generic. So I know from the bill that I get.
Mm-hmm.
But it also doesn't include Stars or IFC. So I don't know. But they had a thing going for a while where the first episode of Party Down was available for free. And you're like, yes. And it was just like a teaser to try to get you to buy the whole package. So the first one was on there. But I think you can buy them a la carte.
Yeah, because they're so good.
So good.
Where they worked for the catering company and they would just go to different parties.
Such a great conceit for
a
show, right?
Like a new thing. Jane Lynch, part of the cast.
Jane Lynch was great in that show. She was replaced. It's kind of interesting. She got real famous right around the time that they were shooting that. And I think the second, they did 2 seasons. The second season of Party Down, she was replaced with Megan Mullally.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right.
But I just thought that says a lot about Jane Lynch's career. It was taken off at that time. But yeah, it's pretty much about a bunch of out of work LA actors/writers who have to cater. And it's so good.
Lizzie Kaplan,
Adam Scott.
Yeah, Adam Scott. Yeah, so good.
What's
so
the
fun.
Guy's name? Is it Paul Marino? Was the guy who...
Ken Marino?
Ken Marino.
Yeah.
Oh, he's the best. The beginning of that show, the show, if you can find it, Party Down, it's probably on Netflix.
Yeah.
The first scene of the first episode tells you everything you didn't know. It's him explaining how to be a great... Like, he explains, like, with his heart, and somebody walks... I forgot how it ends, but somebody walks in with the wrong... Like, as he's telling, you got to love what you love, and you don't know where they're at yet, and somebody walks in with the wrong plate of shrimp or whatever. It's like, no, Jim... How many times did you tell you wrong shrimp? Like, it's like a perfect bit to start that show.
Yeah,
it's really
so good.
And Freaks and Geeks is a classic.
Yeah, have to watch that.
Coming up at 10 o'clock, we're going to play Picnic. This is where we're giving the 2016 Chicago Cubs legitimate, authentic nicknames. We've been doing it all month long. We've got a huge list of great nicknames.
Mm-hmm.
Last week we did... Let me think about this. They're all kind of blend together after a while. But we did the rookies. Albert Almora Jr., who was Whopper Jr.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we gave him. And then the Esmeralda gave, my favorite was the other one.
Wilson?
Wilson Contreras, right.
Sweet Peppers. So fun to say.
Come on, Sweet Peppers.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah, it's very good. So tonight, we're going to bring you some Heart and Soul. Jason Hammel, the fourth starter for the Chicago Cubs, who had a great first half. He's kind of slowed down a little bit here. As had the Cubs. As Hammel goes, so did the Cubs. And then also tonight, Jason Hayward, prized free agent outfielder who came from the Cardinals, who has sputtered. He has not had a great first half. He was injured, but he's really not playing up to the sort of lofty expectations that the contract that he signed, mm-hmm. sort of we needed to see.
Yeah.
But it's early, and he still is a spark plug, and he gets on base when you need to get on base. I really like him.
Yeah.
He works really hard.
Tremendous outfielder.
He's a defensive, one of the best defensive outfielders in baseball. Mm-hmm. So we're going to give nicknames to Jason Hayward and to Jason Hamill. 312-981-7200.
I've been seeing a lot of Jay Hay Kid. I don't know if those are good
enough.
Here we
go again. I'm not a fan of. We're really trying to branch out and not just combine to the first and last names. Jay Ha.
Mm-hmm.
Jay Hay. Jay Hay and Jay Ha. 312-981-7200. I'm getting some good. I got a good one. Gigi for Golden Glove. Gold Glove.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Gigi for Hayward.
Well, I mean, we'll get one thing about Jason Hamill.
Mm-hmm.
He's a huge Pearl Jam fan.
All right. You're going to have to bring this.
Oh, we'll have.
And Matt Klein. Matt Klein will be here as well, one of the original Cub Fan Jam guys, to give us what we need to know about Jason Hamill and Jason Hayward.
Early in the show, when you were kind of in the beginning, when you were going over what we're going to do tonight, and you mentioned picnic, I got a text from my wife saying nicknames for Hamill and Hayward, Loser 1 and Loser 2. She's not very happy with the current Cubs performances.
Is our segment going to go down the tubes because the Cubs start losing? I was like, I don't have a nickname for those losers. Although the White Sox look like they are going to take the series from the Yankees. They're winning 5-0 in the eighth or ninth inning right now.
See?
Ninth inning, top of the nine.
I think that we should do a Sox.
It's funny because when we started this, we were going to go back. We're going to go back and forth, and then we determined when the Sox did their June swoon, their May-June swoon, we said, nah. Yeah. But now they're coming back. If they win this game, this will be the fifth series and the first time since I think maybe like 2012, 2011 that they've won this many series in a row.
Wow.
Yeah. They're still 7.5, 6.5 back. The Tigers beat the Indians today, so that would be good.
The Indians, much like the Cubs, will probably have to come down to earth a little bit.
Yeah, they started to play a little bit of competition. The Tigers and the Blue Jays, and both teams kind of smacked them around a little bit in the last week. So we'll see. But you know, the White Sox are going to have to win some meaningful games against Central Division foes. They're going to have to sweep some series against the Royals. Tigers, eesh. Indians, eesh. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Those are tough teams, and the Sox don't always. They're winning right now, and they've won some series that are pretty good, but they got to do a little bit better. All right, coming up, 10:00 picnic. Are we ready? Also, Dwayne Wade, yay! Coming up, picnic. Jason Hamill, Jason Hayward. We're getting some good stuff. The J Hammer. 779 says the J Hammer. And oh, Mark Tears back. We missed you last week. I couldn't get David Jennings involved. He didn't seem to care.
Wow.
Esmeralda came out. She picked some good ones.
I heard she had a strong showing.
She did. Although I will say that my buddy Tommy afterwards was like, we need a recall on Whopper Jr. He didn't like that Esmeralda picked that one. And I said, you know what? Esmeralda, she gets to choose.
Better one? Did he come up with a better one?
I think that he was, he liked one of the other ones.
Feared Al Krankovich?
Yeah, exactly. I think he liked LL Cool J, which was the other one. But that's what I said. Yeah, you know what? It's opinions.
Someone already has that one.
Right.
LL Cool J. He owns that name.
Yeah, right. There'd be some trademark infringements. You can't do it. All right. Well, Jason Hamill and Jason Hayward, 312-981-7200. If you get them. If you're the one that we pick, we'll get you tickets to the Blackhawks convention. How about that? That's great. Here's to you, men in blue. You're the cream of the crop. You're a team built on dreams. You'll go right to the top. And as sure as there's ivy on the center field wall, the men in blue are gonna win it all. Well, J.D., it's been a long, long time since 1945. It's all but the Wrigley faithful. Time and here's the place we even up the score. There it is. Listen to that track. Beats by Zim tonight here on the Download. 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Matt Klein. Back nine Klein. How are you, Matt?
I'm good, buddy. How are you, man?
Good, good. All right. So tonight it is time for another installment of Picnic. This, of course, is our attempt to give every member of the 2016 Chicago Cubs a legitimate, authentic, crowdsourced nickname. The nicknames that they have right now are they're no good. Most of them are based on putting their first and last name together.
Jay Hay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. Yeah. Which is just kind of
Jay Ham.
It's very bro-y. Yeah. You know, to do that for if you're going to be a champion, and we believe the 2016 Chicago Cubs are destined, even in this cold spell, they're destined. They have to have creative, clever, crowdsourced nicknames. They can't just get, they just can't put two names together. So today we are going to bring you Jason Hamill and Jason Hayward. Okay, Jason Hamill, the pitcher. And Jason Hayward, the right fielder for the Chicago Cubs, 312-981-7200. If you are the ones that Esmeralda chooses, you're going to get a pair of tickets to the 9th Annual Chicago Blackhawks Convention at the Hilton, July 15th through the 17th. All right, so why don't we start with you, Klein? What are you thinking? What do we need to know? Why don't we start with Jason Hamill? What do we need to know about Jason Hamill?
Jason Hamill is a 6'6 right-handed pitcher from Greenville, South Carolina. All right. Went to South Kitsap High School, mascot Wolves, if you could play with that a little bit. And he was drafted years back and opted to go to college. Didn't sign with, I believe it was the Mariners. He went to Treasure Valley Community College.
Really?
Yeah.
So instead of going to the minor leagues at that time, he went to community college instead.
He did. Yeah. And I looked into Treasure Valley Community College, and all the notable alums are like baseball players. Okay, so yeah, it's got to be some sort of little, you know, it's like, what's that high school? Like all the basketball players in Maryland.
Right. Or the football players in Miami. Right.
Right.
All right. So that's what we know about Jason Hamill. So why don't we go to the phones? We also have Jason Hayward. Why don't we get Jason Hayward out of the way, too? What do we know about Jason Hayward?
Jason Hayward, all you need to know is that his full name is Jason Alias Hayward, and he's from Ridgewood, New Jersey. Yeah, his middle name is Alias, A.K.A.
Did you know that, Pete? That's a well-known Cubs
Pete
name.
Knew, yeah. Not much about it. You know, he went from high school. He debuted very young. Came up with the Braves as a 21-year-old. Little, you know, people don't realize he's only 26 years old. Seems like he's been around forever.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. He's actually a day younger than Rizzo or something like that.
I think it's the beard.
It is the beard.
The beard makes him look like he's 35.
Yeah, he does kind of range like an old man. He's got that like look. Like remember like Greg Oden?
Mm-hmm.
You're like, he just seems older than he actually is.
I got one. I don't want to give it away so early, but maybe we should call him Sarge Jr. He's kind of got a Sarge look, you know.
He could be a little Sarge.
Pete, what do we need to know about Hamill and Hayward?
Well, I go for the music. So as I mentioned earlier, Jason Hamill, a huge Pearl Jam fan, uses Alive for his walk up songs. Okay. He last week when they were in New York, instead of concentrating on the team, he was doing a serious radio show on the Pearl Jam channel.
And that's why he gave up 10 runs on Saturday?
Yeah. Right. And I saw him tweet something that day, too, about that game. He's like, you know, sometimes you're the hammer and sometimes you get nailed or something. I'm like, okay. All right, guy.
Hammer? Hamill?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
And, much like Matt said, young guy. But his songs, his walk-up songs are Future and Drake. He has a couple
Hayward
of
is?
Yeah, he switches off.
He goes back and forth, not one that's the two of them together. So not like Jumpman, which is both.
No. Okay. He switches off.
Okay, good. All right. Drake and Future I saw an article that said that those two on tour, they're coming to the Chicago, I think, later this month or in August. They are the number one tour right now, selling-wise. Drake and Future.
Believe that.
There you go. I'm sure that's bogus. Some form. All right. Let's go to the lines. Let's go to Kate. Kate, okay, so who do you have a nickname for?
For Hamill.
Okay, for Jason Hamill. What do you got?
Okay, so I was just trying to be creative, So Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill was the actor.
Yeah, right.
And so the last names are differently spelled, but you could do, since it was Skywalker for Hamill, you could do No Walker.
No Walker?
No Walker.
Okay.
Come on, No Walker.
Hey, No Walker, No Walker.
Yeah, right? It's got a vibe to it. Yeah. I like that.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Kate. Thank you for that. No Walker. All right. No Walker.
Yeah, we could do better than that.
Well, I think of like, what do they call like in the movie Blade, they had Daywalker. You know, it's like sort of like a vampire reference.
Right.
He's a Daywalker. No Walker. All right, so let's go through some of the texts that we have. 779 says, for Jason Hamill, how about Ham It Up? 602 says, for Hamill, Crocus.
Crocus?
I don't know what that's in referring to.
Ham. Crocus.
Oh, Crocus Ham.
Oh,
I like that. Okay. Crocus. Again, that's going to be a tough one. I always think about being in a certain section at the ballpark and being able to yell that nickname out. And for someone next to you go, what is that? And you go, crack, it's Ham. You know, Hamill. And they go, you're the best. You're the best guy I know. Like, so that's what you're going for. So
are you
like, going
to be here tomorrow? Yeah. Are you going to be here tomorrow?
I've got the whole series, man. Yeah. I got a guy for each guy. all right.
What about Pearl Jam? Like even flow? Yeah. Daughter.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Jeremy.
I don't know.
734. I'm not sure who this is for. Maybe it's for Hayward Chicken Hawk.
Probably Hayward.
Yeah, I don't know what that's for. 734 says red-tailed chicken hawk. I don't know. Maybe they're bird watchers. They got the wrong show. 779 goes with the Hayward Hammer.
It's like a combination of both guys.
Yeah. 630, and I like this one from Judy, the hamster. Right. You know, that's got the stir on the back, which we're not big fans of, you know, like, hey, the Jerry stir.
Right.
You know, like that kind of thing. But it does work, the hamster. Yeah. We do like that. 312-981-7200. Let's take our first break. We'll come back. We'll continue Picnic, Jason Hamill and Jason Hayward. What should their nicknames be? Stay with us. Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city with more journalists at work than any other local news source. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com. Zim's coming up with some good ones tonight. Justin Kaufman here on the Down Low. We're playing Picnic. We're trying to get legitimate, authentic nicknames for every one of the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Tonight, Jason Hamill and Jason Hayward. Matt Klein's in studio with me. He's our color commentator. He's giving us ideas. Matt, you're almost like you're a facilitator.
I'm a facilitator,
you're the
yeah.
The point guard. You're the Rajon Rondo of the Picnic.
Yeah, not many of my ideas really stick in the end.
No, you're giving ideas. You're greasing it.
Just trying to give it, the show a little blood flow here.
Yeah, that's right. You said pep it up.
So somebody just sent me Jason Flannel. I think that's probably maybe a grunge Pearl Jam play. Yeah.
There's a good one here that is an early favorite for Jason Hamill that combines his love of Pearl Jam with his name, Ham Jam.
Okay. Hey, I got one.
Okay.
Just thought of this one. How about Honeywell for an overpriced defense contract in Jason Hayward?
Oh, it could be a Honeywell ham, too.
Yeah, or a Honeywell ham.
Well, that could go for
Jason
both
Hamill.
Of these guys. Wow.
Well, we're talking about Wade and Rondo the rest of the night here. It looks like Honeywell. That's the name for both of them.
630 says, carry on my Hayward son.
How about elderly woman behind the counter in a small town? That works for...
Carry on my A-word.
I like that one a lot.
Then you could... Yeah, because that would work. Carry on my Haywards. And everyone's like, this guy's a gas. This guy that's sitting next to me at Wrigley, he's so funny. All right.
The Golden Fleece. Jason and the Argonauts.
Oh, that's good.
They were in search of the Golden Fleece.
219 says, for Hayward, how about Bale? Like a bale of hay for Hayward and bail us out of tough spots in the outfield.
Yeah, certainly not at the plate, but in the outfield, yes.
Okay. How about, let's see what else we got. With Ward, pronounce this Ward. So Hayward, so Ward, word up, or word, or word. Hayward, or stretch for his height and his fielding prowess. Stretch.
Stretch. How about, like, something glove?
Yeah.
Jennifer Glove Hewitt.
Yeah, that, I see that one. Yeah, that could work.
Lonesome Glove.
A lot of Hamels coming in around ham and pig. So there's Mr. Pig. I just don't know if that's going to be one that's going to stick.
Yeah, let's see.
There's also Lil Piggy. There's, I don't know. Some
Hamels, there's though. A good one in there for Jason Hamel. Or, yeah, Jason Hamel. Ball Peen playing off the hammer.
Ball Peen hammer, right.
Now, and I thought, what about the Craftsman?
Ooh.
Like, you know, a hammer. The right. Craftsman hammer, and he, you know, he's a pitcher. He has, you know, he has like five pitches that he uses.
I like
the
those.
Craftsman. Yeah.
He does have five pitches.
Jason Hamel. Could we call him Bob Vila?
There you go.
Bob Vila. Vila.
Vila.
Via.
Via. Bob Via. That could be good. Maybe there's something with the construct, like a construction site kind of guy, like a carpenter, something like that. 262 says for Jason Hayward, how about Gandalf? Because he's got the beard.
Okay.
Although Gandalf's beard is long and white, and Jason Hayward's is short and dark. So I don't see how that plays. But I like it.
I'm thinking of all these defensive things, like vacuum, void, the void. Hmm. Oh, man.
331 says, how about ham radio? I mean, I think you just call him ham. You know, like that's sort of like the, you know, when you go ham. It's kind of like street way of saying that. Oh, man, you just went crazy. You went ham. So Jason Hamel could just be ham.
No, I thought we don't like the just the shortening up. It seems very hockey-ish.
Yeah, but I'm saying ham is not, I mean, yes, that shortens his name, but the concept of going all ham has nothing to do with Hamel. That's a whole different, that's like more for...
So when you're at the game...
Let's go, going ham.
And then somebody say, oh, yeah, because his, you know, his name's Hamel, right? You're just shortening it up there. And then you say, yeah. No.
No, 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 it's street lingo.
How about Stretch? Isn't he 6'6"?
Yeah, that is big, that's Hamel, yeah. Are you going for Hamel?
Or how about the Wolf?
The Wolf.
He played at South Kitsip High School. They're the Wolves.
There you go.
That's what Klein just said. I can't believe that, like, both of you have pulled out the mascot of the high school.
Well, I stole that routine from Martier. Yeah. He is the mascot king.
The Wolf.
The Wolf.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. I was busy typing.
No. Tool Man. 606 says the Tool Man. Well, that's good.
Let's see here.
All right. Jason Hayward. How about hey, hey, hey? In Bill Cosby voice from Fat Albert. That's what it says to do here. Also, 630 says, how about MC Hamel? Hamel time.
Mm. Hamel don't hurt him.
Hamel don't hurt him. That's pretty good. Jason Hamel. Hamel don't hurt him.
Hamel don't hurt him.
How about the Bulldog?
Yeah. What is the reference to?
Well, I'm just looking at his dimensions here. He's a big dude. He's 240.
He's 240. Jason Hamel's 240.
That's what it says here.
Hamel's enormous.
Wow.
Yeah. Hamel's
a
big
boy. Guy.
Yeah.
224 says, why not call him Turkey Bacon since he's lean?
Mm.
It doesn't sound very lean at 240.
Well, 6'6". Yeah, that's kind of lean.
Yeah. I guess he is 6'6". 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200. Here's one that's not going to work. There's some creative ones coming in. This one, half year Hamel.
Half year Hamel. First half Hamel. Yeah. I like first half Hamel.
That's pretty good. For Jason Hayward, Teddy Pendergrass. Kind of looks like Teddy Pendergrass.
Yeah. Hayward looks like a guy that would be like just smoking a cigar in the corner of a play, like a jazz bar somewhere. Yeah. He certainly does.
He's got a good look. He's one of the more handsome Cubs, I think. Heartburn Hamel? Heartbreak Hamel?
That's...
No, come on. You can't give him like a negative nickname, right?
Why not?
Well, I mean, it's 2016 Chicago Cubs. If we were in Philadelphia, yeah.
I see what you're saying.
How about ham bone or ham wow, like sham wow?
Ham wow.
Ham wow.
I didn't think about the play on ham. Let's see.
There's a lot of good stuff. I know everyone's really going for the ham and the food angle. I think there's something we're just not there on Jason Hayward. He's an outfielder. He's a defender. He's the best defender in baseball. He can range a lot of places. He's I just keep thinking like something almost along the lines of what we did with like the calculator, like you just mentioned with the some sort of defense. I like the contractor.
And Dexter Fowler, free range, yeah. Kind of fit into that.
Security guard. What's defense? Best defense. Safety.
Secretary of Defense.
Yeah, right. The Secretary of Defense.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, right there. Is there a Secretary of Defense is there a Secretary of Defense shortening of that? That everyone's like everyone calls him Chief. You know, or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Commander in Chief.
Yeah, the Secretary of Defense, the cabinet.
Okay.
Well, that could be good if you had the whole outfit outfield and you called them the cabinet,
right?
Left, center, and right. That would be really good.
Yes. Bryant could be the Secretary of Education.
Secretary of Commerce.
Commerce. Yeah.
Mr. Fowler.
Right. Yeah.
No, we're just brainstorming on air here.
Yeah.
But we're getting there. All right. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break for the news. Come back. There's much more here. Oh, there we go. Hayward, 219, the Pentagon.
Ooh.
Ooh, see, I knew it. I knew we were getting somewhere. The Pentagon.
Rumsfeld.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back, play some more Picnic. Stay with us. Esmeralda Leon, how we doing? We're at the halfway point, you've been listening in intently. Do you feel like you don't have to give away your secrets yet, but do you feel like you got any front runners in your mind?
There's a couple that I like.
Yeah.
So you're on the right track.
Are we going in the right track when we're talking about defense? Like if the guy's a good defender, you know, we start giving him some nicknames that have to do with the defense.
Leatherman is a Pearl Jam song too. There is a Pearl Jam song.
See, now that just sounds like
he's
a serial killer.
Yeah. That's
Watch
true.
Out for the Leatherman.
Watch out for Leatherman.
Leatherman.
Yeah.
Cut your face off.
Well, maybe that's a good baseball thing. I don't know. Like it's like, oh, he's so good, he'll cut your face off with a chainsaw. Oh, yikes. Maybe I went the wrong. There's some really good ones that are coming in right now. I'm going to save them for after the news, but we're starting to get somewhere on Hayward for sure with the defense.
Wilson, the leather expert.
Yeah, we had the Wilson. We kind of did the Wilson stuff with Contreras last
week.
That's
true. Well, his name was Wilson.
Yeah. There's some good ones. I don't want to give them away. Maybe I will. So 773 says the guardian of the outfield for Hayward. Jason Hayward, Haywire. That's not bad.
Haywire?
Haywire.
Mm.
No, we don't like it.
It's no Pentagon.
574 said Hayward the Wall.
Okay.
See, remember the goalie Nikolai Habibulin?
Sure.
When he was on top of his game, they called him the Bulin Wall.
See, that's what we need, the Hayward.
But see,
Hayward.
Yeah.
Right.
The haystack. Well, maybe. No way you can hit that ball over the haystack.
The haystack.
That's ridiculous.
Boy, go ahead and think you could hit that ball over the haystack.
It's like, it's how baseball started, in the back of the farm, right?
Right. I don't think so, but we'll go with it.
There's something there. All right. We'll come up with some more here. 312-981-7200. We got a lot more Picnic ahead of us.
Get on the big blue train. The big blue train is rolling down the tracks now. A full head of steam. The Cubs are on their way. October bound. They're going to reach that destination. 100 years is far too long to wait. So get on board, don't hesitate. This is our year, so don't delay. Hey, hey.
Yeah, they got there.
Get on the big blue
Get on the big blue train. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. We are playing Picnic, where we're giving nicknames to the 2016 Chicago Cubs. We've got a whole list of Cubs players that we've already given nicknames to over the last month and a half. Tonight, we're going after Jason Hammel and Jason Hayward. They need to get nicknames. We got some great ones that have already been thrown out in the first half. Matt Klein is here in studio. I'm one of the members of the Cubs Fan Jam here on the download. He's helping us out. He's giving us color commentary. Give us some ideas. Mm-hmm. Susan's got a good one. Let's go right to the phones. Susan, what do you like for Jason Hayward?
Force Field.
I love it.
Force Field.
Force Field.
Mm.
Right?
Writing that down.
That is great. Susan, you might have a winner here. I'm going to keep you on hold for a second so Pete can remember who you are.
Hold on. All right.
I like that one.
I like Force Field.
Hay Fever.
815 says Jason Green Eggs and Hamill.
Short and sweet.
Why not just call them Green Eggs?
Sure.
847 says Jason Rerun Hayward. Rerun from What's Happening. Okay, they're both black. They look nothing like each other.
Yeah.
Why would Rerun and Jason Hayward be anywhere near?
Yeah, I think you nailed the connection there. Yeah.
So, come on. 602 says Hay Fever. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. 815 says Pearl Jammel.
Pearl Jammel. Pearl Ham.
Yeah. And the Haymaker. The Haymaker's good. I like that one. The Haymaker. All right. I'll keep going here. Hamill is the figurine. Ooh.
Like that.
Yeah.
The like figurine. Like the, what's that?
I think it's Hummel.
Hummel.
But the Hummel figurine, but I do like that one, the figurine. Although I'm not sure specifically if you're going to get a, if that's going to work at Wrigley. Come on, figurine.
Yeah, it is Hummel. Yeah, Hummel figurines, artwork and gifts.
Yeah. 630 says the General. 630, another 630. That's the third one we've heard for the Haymaker for Jason Hayward.
Yeah, we'll write it down.
The Horseman, Jason the Horseman Hayward.
Huh? The Big Salutation.
Heywood, here's a good one. 630 says, the C.I. Hay. Instead of this.
Okay.
That's pretty good. 773 says, Shaft for Hayward, because he's the man. All right.
I can dig it.
I can dig it, yeah. Hailstorm, 262, Jason Hayward, Hailstorm. Seven seven nine says got you covered hammer.
What is that? I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe that's a hammer
got
song.
Got you covered hammer?
Yeah, maybe that's a hammer song. Okay. We don't know. Got you covered. 847, enough of this. J Ham and J Hay works.
Well,
no, we're not doing
that.
That
person obviously doesn't know our main rule of this game.
Can't do that. Yeah. 630 says Haywire, so we're getting a lot of Haywires. 630 says $10 bill for Alexander Hamilton.
Mm.
Come on.
On base percentage is a big part of Hayward's game.
Yeah, right. Maybe that's his
there.
Thing. Hmm.
Walks.
Because players foul off, can't hit him. How about play on Ham, Shankster?
Sawed off.
So a lot of good stuff. Hamel rhymes with camel, so how about Humpy?
Camel throw.
right. No, that's not gonna work.
Sorry.
Yeah. All right, keep going here. Hold on. All right. Jammer for Jason Hamel.
Jammer?
Jammer. All right, that could work. Ham and cheesecake.
What is that?
No. I don't even know what that is.
Absolutely not.
I do. 312's got Dr. Seuss, Green Eggs and Ham.
Right. Yeah.
That could work.
I was
like
thinking
a Dr. Seuss.
Seuss. Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Seuss. And they go, why Dr. Seuss? Green Eggs and Hamel. And everyone goes, this guy.
He's back. Is that one guy that was free? Is that Free Range? Is that the guy that said Free Range last week? Is he here?
So we're getting some good stuff. 574 says Jay Walker.
Hey,
I'm not sure who that's for.
Well, Hayward, Walker on base percentage.
Jay Walker.
Jay Walker. You know, I saw a stat the other day. This is crazy. It's hard to do. Hayward's on base percentage is higher than his slugging percentage.
Wow.
Yeah. It's almost impossible to do, actually.
779 says, come on, this is fixed. All you're doing is hoping someone, all you're doing is suckering us in. Bye.
Huh.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you mean fixed? Esmeralda can. There's no fix.
I don't care. So I go by my feeling.
Well, we got you. You got us.
You got us.
No one's paying me.
That's ridiculous. The fix. I'd be up for listening to that debate. That's a good one for the new segment. Debatable. We're gonna do that on.
I gotta say something. I mean, I know you're quarterbacking this whole thing, but. I'm dying to know what Martier's got, if he's got anything in the hopper.
I think he's working on it.
Is he working on it? He's going right now?
He's working on it. I know he'll have something good.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got the Greenville Grinder.
Okay.
That's for Hamill. TKO for Hayward. TKO. I like that.
I don't know what that...
How about Black Forest for Jason Hamill? There's a lot of ham.
There's a big play on ham. John Ham.
Not a Hamill fan, says Dumpster Fire.
Ham Hawk.
Ham Hawk. This is a good one for Hamill. There's a lot of... When you get to the point where you're not doing the All-Stars, you start to get people who, because the Cubs are on a losing streak, you get some negative ones. This is one of my favorites. Jason Hamill's Santa Claus. Because he gives away victories? Come on. Ridiculous. That's a good one. Double deuce for number 22. Is that Hayward, 22?
Hayward's 22, yeah. Hamill's 39.
Ooh, that's a good one. The right field rifle.
Ooh. Okay. We don't have anything right field-wise or outfield-wise.
Right, the right stuff.
Yeah.
Let's see. Hold on. He also I'm surprised you guys haven't referenced this at all, but he also wears the helmet that covers his face because he got popped in the head when he was playing on the Cardinals, right?
It's true.
So now he wears that protective thing that Javi Baez wears.
So like it's almost like a mask,
like RoboCop,
right?
Something like that, you know? Yeah, something of that.
Let's see.
All right, 312-981-7200. Let's take a break because I think we're at the point. 312, Hayward the Musical.
Was that like Hamilton?
I think so. You do better with Hamill.
Yeah.
Hamill the Musical. Ooh, 602 with a, this one might be good. I think that Esmeralda's going to like this one. 602 comes in with the Hamburglar.
Okay.
Because he steals hamburgers from the opposing teams. I don't know if that's a thing.
No.
I like that one a lot, though. Like, Jason Hamill's thing was Hamburglar. That's pretty good. But, like, what is he? But you got to come up with this saying. Like, he's stealing hamburgers, stealing the hopes and dreams of the other team. He's stealing. What could he?
I would really love if that was a story. That, like, he's sneaking into the opposing teams and stealing all their hamburgers.
I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Yeah, like what if he's got a little thievery to him? I don't know. We can make this up. We can make this part of
it. Yeah. He's like a klepto, like in the locker room type thing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Hey, who stole my boombox?
Yeah.
Like an old.
Why do you think Hamill's been on so many teams the last 6 years? Guy's always stealing stuff.
Guys, anyone see my wristband?
Yeah.
I used to have a gray wristband. All right. Let's take a break. We will continue and wrap it up and get the top two nicknames for Jason Hamill and Jason Hayward after the break. Stay with us. All this history calls to me. My God, it's been so long. We need a new attitude. Something to right the wrongs. Ever since the curse, we thought it couldn't get worse, but still the Cubbies rock. The Cubbies rock. Cubbies rock, Cubbies rock, Cubbies rock, Cubbies rock. Nothing like a Drew Carey parody song to get you moving at 10:45 at night. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with Pete Zimmerman and Matt Klein and Esmeralda Leon and Rob Martier. We're playing Picnic tonight. This, of course, the weekly segment where we give legitimate, authentic, crowdsourced nicknames to the 2016 Chicago Cubs. We've already done, I think, probably 12 guys. Do you have the list? They're all starting to go together. But do you keep a list? Should we go over it real quick?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Dexter Fowler.
Right. Free range.
Free range. Kyle Hendricks, the calculator. Javi Baez, babyface.
Right.
Hector Rondon, Hectoro. Tommy La Stella, Tommy Gunn. Pedro Strop, White Castle. Addison Russell, Smooth Criminal. Ben Zobrist, Zorro. Chris Bryant, Roy.
I love that one. Roy Hobbs.
Russ Grimm, the Grim Reaper, Phantom Menace, or whatever.
No, it's the Grim Reaper. It's harvest time.
It's harvest time. And Albert Elmora, Whopper Jr.
Right.
And Wilson, Sweet Peppers, Contreras.
All right. Let's go quickly through the ones that just came in the break. How about J.K. Balling, like J.K. Rowling? That's a tough one. This person's saying Hayward wore the mask when he was with the Braves, too. Long nickname. McHamill with cheese. All right. Skywalker for Jason Hamill. I get that because of the Hamill.
What do you like? Somebody that herds sheep is a shepherd, right?
Yeah.
What is like somebody that just tends to a farm? I guess that would be a farmer, like somebody that oversees a field. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what you're. Oh yeah, like for right field.
Yeah.
Like the.
There's a name for that. I can't think of it.
An outfielder.
An outfielder. Okay. Yeah. Right. Thank you.
And then Hayward the Traitor came in. I'm sure that's a St. Louis Cardinal fan.
Yeah, you think?
All right. 630 says Sheepdog. That's what you're looking for.
Sheepdog.
Sheepdog. I don't know if you really want to call. Jason Hayward, hey, come on, Sheepdog.
Let's go, Sheepdog.
Why do you call him Sheepdog? Oh, because he tends to his flock, which is the outfield. This guy's got to go. Martir, you got any thoughts as we wrap it up here?
How about for Jason Hayward? The Wrecking Ball.
Oh, that's good.
Because when he played in the minors, he hit a batting practice home run that reportedly went into the parking lot, damaging a Coca-Cola truck.
Love it.
That's pretty good, man.
Huh?
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
The Wrecking Ball.
I'm telling you.
God, he does his homework, man.
He does, right? All right, let's go to the these are the ones I'm going to throw the semifinalists at Klein and Zimmerman. And then we're going to give the final three to Esmeralda. Are you ready? All right, so here's what we got for Jason Hayward. We've got this for you, Klein, okay? Carry On My Hayward Son.
Okay.
Classic. We've got Pentagon, Rumsfeld, Forcefield, The Haymaker, Shaft, and The Wrecking Ball.
All right. The Forcefield I love. I'm not going to go with it, though. Mm-hmm. And I think Carry On My Hayward's Son needs to be played for maybe not walk up music, but
it's more like a song.
But I'm going to go with Rumsfeld. I know it's not going to win, but I just love Rumsfeld for the Secretary of Defense.
All right. And also the Secretary of Defense, right? All right, Pete, what do you like? I got Carry On My Hayward's Son, Pentagon, Rumsfeld, Forcefield, Haymaker, and everything else.
I like Pentagon.
Okay.
That's a good one.
All right. I'll take those into consideration. on Hamill's side, I got the Hamster, Ham Jam, the Craftsman, Green Eggs, or Dr. Seuss, or Stretch.
What about Black Forest?
What do you like, Pete?
Well, I'm going to go with mine, the Craftsman.
You like the Craftsman. Okay. How about you, Klein?
Yeah, actually, I kind of like that one too. I didn't even know that was that an option.
Yeah, Pete threw it out because he liked it that he had five pitches and that he was hammer,
craftsman.
Yeah,
tools.
Yeah. Yeah. We could have expanded on that one a little more maybe, but yeah, craftsman I like. What was the very first one you said for Hamill?
The hamster.
Oh, no.
There's the hamster, ham jam.
No walker,
right? That was a good one.
Okay.
Stretch.
Actually, I'm going to go no walker just to kind of contradict.
No walker. Come on, no walker.
No walker.
All right, Esmeralda, are you ready?
Yes.
The winner tonight, the person who chose the Jason Hayward and the Jason Hamill nicknames is going to get a pair of tickets to the 9th annual Chicago Blackhawks convention at the Hilton Chicago Hotel on July 15th through the 17th. We got two pairs, so we're giving one to each. For Jason Hayward, why don't we start there? We've got Pentagon, Rumsfeld, Forcefield, or the Haymaker. So it's Pentagon, Rumsfeld, Forcefield, or the Haymaker. Show your math.
I kind of like the Haymaker.
Yeah.
I don't like Pentagon. I don't. Or Rumsfeld. I just don't.
Come on.
Sorry.
No, but you're right. Those are.
They
those
do
are,
Haymaker.
So you like Haymaker. I like
what's
Haymaker.
What's the deal behind that one? Was it?
Well, his name is Hayward. So
I think, that was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I think Haymaker, isn't that a drink? What's Haymaker? What is Haymaker? Someone who makes money?
Is it a machine?
Is it a machine? All those things does are it, Jason Hayward.
Oh, that's a baler.
He bales, yeah. He makes hay. He makes cash. He makes bank.
I like the Haymaker.
All right, the Haymaker. I like that one, too. It's no nonsense. Because if you call him Rumsfeld, I love Rumsfeld. I think Rumsfeld's funny. Maybe you can come up with that as like a secondary win.
Or Chuck Hagel.
General Petraeus.
Robert Gates.
Come on, Robert Gates.
Come on, Caspar Weinberger. Let's go, Jimmy Schlesinger.
Oh, you're making me snort.
Hey,
not, not good. Live snort. All right. All right. Let's do Jason Hamill. Okay, Esmeralda. Do we like Ham Jam? The Craftsman. Stretch or green eggs? And I'll throw in the Craftsman for Pete Zimmerman.
What was the first one?
Ham Jam, because he likes Pearl Jam. Now, I can give you this backstory on these. The Ham Jam, because he likes Pearl Jam. Green eggs, because it's Hamill. So I actually love green eggs and Hamill.
Right.
What about Pearl Ham?
Stretch, I think that was Martyr, but that tall. Also showed up because he's tall. And then the Craftsman, because he's a, what was it again? Because Ham?
I don't know.
Because he's tall. He's tall. He's got a lot of pitches.
Tall Rudd.
I'm liking the Ham Jam.
Ham Jam.
I like the rhyming ones. Ham Jam.
Pete's showing. He just did a nod. No, he didn't like that one. Are you pulling a trump card over there?
No, I don't. I have no trump card. I have no trump card.
Why don't you like Ham Jam?
I don't like Roy either, but I'm sitting here pouting.
Well, you like the Craftsman.
but I still show up every day.
I like Ham Jam, too. I'm with Esmeralda. Ham Jam.
So what we got was the second one?
What do you mean?
It's Ham Jam, and then what was the other one?
Stretch, green eggs, the Craftsman.
Yeah. Ham Jam.
Ham Jam.
Oh, man.
Right. Ham Jam.
Ding, 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 ding.
Ham Jam.
For Jason Hamill, we add Jason. He's going to love it. Hey, Ham Jam. And then they go, why Ham Jam? He goes, because he likes Pearl Jam. Yeah. Everyone goes, you're awesome, man.
Yeah.
And the same with the Haymaker. And they're like, I don't even have to ask a question. I get it.
I saw him at Rosemont Horizon like back in 97.
What about Pearl Ham? Did we kind of mention
I
that?
I said
yeah.
Pearl Ham. Yeah, I think it might be a little
better
bit
than Ham. Well, Ham Jam.
Pearl Ham makes me think that the ham, like a piece of ham has something wrong with it.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But Ham Jam.
Ham Jam. Ham Jam. And 606 just let us know that Haymaker is a swing you take at somebody.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go.
Yes, right. That's good. With
right,
Hayward.
A swing.
So, and the good news, you guys, is that in the face of somebody trying to call us out to say that this was fixed, both of these nicknames were chosen by listeners.
Mm.
The Haymaker, and Ham Jam.
Truly crowdsourced.
Crowdsourced tonight on The Download. Thanks for playing Picnic tonight. We'll be back next Wednesday night with another set. That'll be the All-Star break, too. So maybe we'll have to do an All-Star. Right?
We could do that, yeah.
I'm trying to think. I don't want to give away the big dogs because we've already done Russell. We've done Bryant. We've done Zobrist. So we still have Lester, Arrieta.
We also have managers in front office managers. Types, too. So
we still got.
I think Theo Epstein is a gold mine.
Still got to figure out Jed Hoyer.
Yeah, exactly. Jason McLeod. You kidding me? It writes itself.
It writes itself. Matt Klein, thanks for being here, my friend.
You got it, buddy.
All right, until next week. That's going to do it tonight here in The Download. Thanks for listening. Tomorrow night, another great show coming your way. It's going to be Thursday already. I don't like it. I don't like it. Mark Geary's going to be here. Mark Geary's the man who used to run the Lincoln Lodge. Great comedy spot up on the north side. It's looking to reinvent itself. It hasn't really had a home for a couple years. Mark's going to come in and talk about his search for a new place to bring alternative comedy to Chicago. That place was great and had a lot of great comedians, a lot of which we are now seeing on television, like T.J. Miller, Kumail. A lot of the guys from Silicon Valley were regulars at the Lincoln Lodge. So we'll talk with Mark about what it takes to run a successful comedy club in the city of Chicago. That's tomorrow on The Download.